From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But they're coming to the finish, and it is all Barbaro. It is sublime performance. He runs away from them all, and he has saved something left for the Preakness. Barbaro wins by 7.
Musket Man charging and Mind That Bird on the far outside. The Derby winner, Mind That Bird, closing the late gap. But it is Rachel Alexandra. She's simply above and beyond them. A filly has won the Preakness.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Senyata is flying, Blaine trying to hold on, Blaine, and Senyata, Blaine has won it ahead. Senyata ran her heart out but had to settle for second.
Oh, they've opened up a six-length lead here with 1 furlong to run. They've left the field reeling behind. American Freedom and Gunrunner are fired behind Arrowgate. What a commanding performance. He won the Travers by 12.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone. Good morning and welcome to the show that launched this network, the Equine Forum, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you in the saddle with me for the next 3 hours, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. Never too early for a Derby countdown, is it? And I know I haven't done one in a very long time, well, since the first Saturday in May. So here you go. 316 days, 9 hours, 43 minutes, and 20 seconds until the 2022 Run for the Roses. But that certainly isn't stopping the folks at Churchill Downs from rolling out the red carpet one more time on this final day of their spring meet. Racing here in the Commonwealth will shift to Ellis Park tomorrow, but Churchill is going out with a bang later today. 7 stakes races, including 2 Breeders' Cup win-in-your-in events, the Grade 1 Fleur de Lis for the Distaff Division and the Grade 2 Stephen Foster for the Breeders' Cup Classic. Now, you go ahead and throw in some promising youngsters in the debutante in the Grade 3 Bashford Manor, along with a mile and a 16th turf race named for Hall of Famer Wise Dan, and you really do have the makings for one heck of a day of thoroughbred racing. Not to mention the fact, by the way, that the Fleur de Lis and the Stephen Foster have attracted the potential leaders in their respective divisions, and that could be argued, but they've attracted 2 good ones, with Latruska showing up in the Fleur de Lis and Maxfield returning in the Stephen Foster. Godolphin president and racing manager Jimmy Bell is going to kick off today's show with me at 8:15 Eastern. He's going to talk about Maxfield, and he'll provide an update on their Belmont Stakes winner, Essential Quality. Looking forward to that visit at 8:15. Churchill Downs Director of Communications, Darren Rogers at 8:35. 2-time Stephen Foster winning trainer Dallas Stewart will be with me in the third hour of the program, 10:25 Eastern. And at 10:40, I'll take you down the road to the Breeders' Cup with Latruska's trainer, Fausto Gutierrez. The native of Mexico opened his U.S. operation in 2019 and now has one of the top mares in training. Pretty cool story. He'll be here, final segment of the show, road to the Breeders' Cup, 10:40 Eastern time. This is also, by the way, an Unsung Heroes Week. And I think you are really, really going to enjoy this week's segment coming up in the second hour of the program, right around 9:20. I'm going to welcome in Churchill Downs and Keeneland Clerk of Scales Javier Torres. He has had that job for many, many years. And much like every unsung hero I've had on the show, he does a job that is critical to the success of our sport. And it's a job you may not even know exists. I'm even going to ask him to share some stories about the jockeys, who are the biggest pranksters in the jocks room. So it should be a really fun segment. Again, that's coming up right around 9:20 Eastern time. Poll question for this morning. If your goal is to win a Breeders' Cup race in November, which horse would you rather have right now? Latruska or Maxfield? Both horses are going to be heavy favorites for today's races at Churchill in their respective races, the Fleur de Lis and, of course, the Stephen Foster. They're both 4-5 on the morning line. So if your goal is to win a Breeders' Cup race in November, which horse would you rather have right now? Go to @HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, to let me know your thoughts. If you don't do social media, email me, Mike at horseracingradio.com. Sportsradio.net. And I'll try to pass along the results as we move throughout the program this morning. Kind of a tough call, really. When you compare the two side by side, in Letruska, you get a 5-year-old mare who appears certainly to be getting better with age, right? She comes into today's Fleur de Lis having won back-to-back Grade 1 races, and she's a head away from being undefeated this year. Her only loss coming at the hands of last year's Kentucky Oaks winner, She Dares the Devil, in the Grade 2 Azari back in March. Her consistency is really nothing new when you look at her record, though. She's won 14 of 19 career starts, and she has the kind of early speed and staying power which makes her a very, very dangerous horse. Maxfield, on the other hand, well, first of all, he no longer has to deal with the expectations of equaling Cigar or Zenyatta in terms of a consecutive win streak. He was a long way from realistically throwing his hat into that ring. But he did begin his career a perfect 5-for-5 before finally tasting defeat in the Grade 1 Santa Anita Handicap back in March. Maxfield is now 6-for-7 lifetime and rebounded beautifully with a very professional win in the Grade 2 Ali Sheba on the Kentucky Oaks undercard. He's not a speedster like Letruska, but he's very adaptable. He's proven he can win from a stalking position or coming from further back. So from a talent and a consistency comparison, I think it's kind of a push. What about the trainers? Letruska's trainer, this is where it kind of starts to separate a little bit. Letruska's trainer, Fausto Gutierrez, has saddled a total of 52 winners since moving to the United States from Mexico in 2019. Overall, he's winning at a 12.1% clip. Brendan Walsh, the trainer of Maxfield, has won 383 races and wins with about 15.6% of his starters. Letruska is the only graded stakes winner Gutierrez has trained, if you don't count Epifanio, who won the Grade 1 in Mexico in 2012. Walsh has saddled 25 graded stakes winners. Advantage, Brendan Walsh. On the ownership side, Maxfield is owned by Sheikh Mohammed's Godolphin, winners of countless top-level races around the globe. Letruska is owned by Herman Larrea's St. George Stable, who has owned a total of, from what I could see, one graded stakes winner here in the United States, the aforementioned Letruska. But St. George Stable can crow about one thing that Sheikh Mohammed cannot. Larrea campaigned a Triple Crown winner in Mexico, but still a Triple Crown winner. Kukulcan pulled off the feat. But even with that, I think you have to say advantage Godolphin on the ownership side when you're comparing the two. So where does that leave us in regards to today's poll question? If your goal is to win a Breeders' Cup race in November, which horse would you rather have right now? Letruska or Maxfield? I think you lean a little more toward Maxfield. And this might be the deciding factor. Take a look at the leaders in their respective divisions. In the older dirt male division, Maxfield will have to deal with another Godolphin-owned horse and Mystic Guide, winner of the Dubai World Cup. We may see him coming up in the Suburban next week at Belmont. He'll have to deal with Silver State, impressive winner of the Met Mile. He's currently on, what, a 6-race win streak? Is Silver State? But other than Mystic Guide, I mean, Happy Savers out there, Charlatan's out there, By My Standards is out there, Nick's Go, certainly formidable. But other than Mystic Guide, if you're talking about a race like the Breeders' Cup Classic, let's say they both go to the Breeders' Cup Classic, there's Maxfield stacks up with everybody else. And who knows, could stack up with Mystic Guide pretty well. So that's the sticking point for him. How about the older, well, and then don't forget about Essential Quality, by the way, who's going to, you know, these 3-year-olds, Essential Quality, Mandaloon, the horses we became familiar with throughout the Triple Crown, I think Essential Quality is probably the best of the bunch. All due respect to Mandaloon. But he'll have to deal with him, too. But I think Maxfield's sitting in a pretty good spot right now. In terms of the older dirt females, well, Latruska would have to deal with Monomoy Girl. She's currently on the sidelines, but let's say she comes back, and we know that she can come back in a big, big way. Let's say Monomoy Girl does come back. Latruska has to deal with her. If she doesn't come back, Latruska's path is a bit easier. She'll have Swiss Skydiver to deal with, who missed the Ogden Phipps with the fever. She'll have Gamine, who we know is good sprinting. Can't she run with Latruska going longer distances in a race like the Breeders' Cup Distaff? And then you're down to, well, the horse that beat Latruska this year. She Dares the Devil as time goes by. You have Bonnie South. All horses that I think Latruska on her day can handle. So, again, when you start looking at the difference in the competition, I think the edge there has to go to Latruska. I don't know. It depends. It depends on if Monomoy Girl gets healthy and gets back on top of her game. Then the edge goes squarely to Maxfield because Monomoy Girl is a beast. She's just that good. And I think she beats Latruska on the square. As good as Latruska is, I think if it was a race like the Breeders' Cup Distaff, I think I have to give the edge to Monomoy Girl just because she really is that brilliant. And we know that she can bounce back from adversity like she has done in the past. So it's an interesting poll question this morning. Very interesting poll question. If you're trying to win a Breeders' Cup race in November, which horse would you rather have, Latruska or Maxfield? I don't know which way the votes are going to go on this one. This could go either way. I think there's going to be people on both sides of the fence here. My guess is that Maxfield's probably going to get the edge. But going to be interesting. And, you know, I talk about Monomoy Girl being able to beat Latruska on the square. Well, she couldn't do it in the Apple Blossom two starts back. Latruska got her by a nose that day. It was one hell of a horse race. But I think I still give the edge to Monomoy Girl in a rematch. All right. Again, very busy show. Going to talk with Jimmy Bell, the president and racing manager with Godolphin. He's going to join me to kick it off after this commercial break. And then a lot of Stephen Foster program talk. And by the way, going to tell you about a brand new thing that's coming to New Jersey. Okay? It's a brand new wagering platform that's coming to New Jersey. And it's going to revolutionize thoroughbred racing. Trust me, it's going to be pretty cool. Back with more. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
The Spring Summer Meet is live now at Gulfstream Park. Live racing Thursday through Sunday through September 26th. Look forward to the Summit of Speed on Saturday, July 3rd, and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series, which begins July 31st. Stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone using First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For the stakes schedule, tips and analysis, and seat reservations, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site tickets are limited, so book your seats now.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment, along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
I'm here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how do you value a horse for insurance?
Well, Mike, it's easy to value a horse when purchased out of a public auction. The insured value would simply be the auction price. But insuring homebreds can be a little more involved.
How so?
Well, factors such as a stud fee, confirmation, pedigree, sales and race records of siblings, even popularity of the stallion all come into play.
How closely do you work with owners in determining a horse's value?
Well, the owner has a pretty good idea of the horse's value. So generally, it's just a matter of agreeing to the request and having the policy issued.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Joe Brown Nicholson at NicholsonInsurance.com or call 859-224-7080. That's 859-224-7080. Nicholson Insurance Agency.
Pin Oak Studs Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
I'm three-time Derby winning jockey Gary Stevens.
This is Rosie Napravnik.
Hi, my name is Sean Bridgman.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia, and I'm listening to Horse Racing Radio.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They're coming to the top of the stretch, and Essential Quality makes its move on the outside of Hot Rod Charlie. Rock Your World has dropped back. Then Ron Bauer to the outside, and Lone Agenda, and they're into the stretch, and it's Essential Quality and a stubborn Hot Rod Charlie, and the two of them putting on a match race on a furlong to run. Essential Quality on the outside. Hot Rod Charlie won't go away. Essential Quality, too good. Essential Quality has won the Belmont Stakes. Hot Rod Charlie was second. It was a long way back to Vermont.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on HRRN. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. Very, very busy program. 3 hours. Still 2 hours and, 45 minutes or so left to go. Take you all the way up until 11 a.m. Eastern, and a lot of things to get to, including a look back at that huge win by Essential Quality in the Belmont Stakes. Going to be joined shortly by Jimmy Bell, who is the president and racing manager of Godolphin, the owners of Essential Quality. They also are the owners of Maxfield, who is the 4-5 morning line favorite in this afternoon's Stephen Foster at Churchill Downs. And, oh, by the way, they are the owners of Dubai World Cup winner Mystic Guide. You know, the year that Godolphin had last year was, it was brilliant. It was so brilliant that they were voted the Eclipse Award winning outstanding owners of 2020. And to see the position that they're in sitting here on June 26th of 2021, I mean, come on. Think about this. We get to the Breeders' Cup Classic in November at Del Mar. And by the way, we'll be there as your exclusive radio home again this year. The only place you'll hear the Breeders' Cup is with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, coast to coast and worldwide. Shameless plug. But you get to the Breeders' Cup Classic in November. Is it possible? Well, I know it's possible, but is it likely if all three of those horses, Mystic Guide, Maxfield, Essential Quality, they all stay healthy, they all come into the Classic in good fashion, and let's say they all go to the Classic and not a race like the Dirt Mile. Well, let's say they all go to the Classic. Could we be looking at a Godolphin trifecta in the Breeders' Cup Classic? It's certainly plausible when you take a look at those three horses. I know that's music to the ears of Jimmy Bell. He would love nothing more than to be able to tell Sheikh Mohammed, hey, we just had the trifecta, 1, 2, 3, in the Breeders' Cup Classic. He's with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jimmy, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good. How did that sound to you, a Godolphin trifecta in the Breeders' Cup Classic?
Wow. Did you figure out first, second, and third?
Boy, I don't know if I'm going to touch that one. I'm a huge Essential Quality fan, right? I love Essential Quality. I love Maxfield's story. And you can't fault Mystic Guide for anything that he's done, so I don't know how you separate the three.
Well, they're probably going to have to figure out how to do it themselves because I don't think we're smart enough to figure it out just from handicapping. But the good news is that's one of the greatest problems you'll ever have to deal with, to have three talented colts, and more excitingly in three different barns with three different opportunities. So very grateful for all that's kind of come that way.
We haven't had a chance to talk on air since that Belmont Stakes victory by Essential Quality. You know, here's a horse, Jimmy. he ends up the beaten favorite in the Kentucky Derby. I thought he was a cinch to win that race. He had a bit of a trouble trip, if you will. Then he comes back 5 weeks later and proves that he is legit, and he proves how good he is in winning the Belmont. Take me back to that Saturday afternoon and just share your thoughts as you think about it.
Well, you know, in fairness to Essential Quality, he's never had a bad race. He's had some unfortunate trips, but he's shown up every single one of them. So, as you well know, certainly in the Derby of all races, where it is that mile and a quarter, where it is that 20-horse field, not only do you have to have the best horse, but you got to have some luck involved too. And, you know, would you like to see a different trip worked out? Probably so. But that's racing, and that's the way it goes. You take that and you move on. And I think that really, you know, our feeling was going into Belmont was just another opportunity. And that's really the way we viewed it. And I think he showed up on the right day and showed his ability, not only in class, but in stamina as well. And I'll take my hat off. I mean, that was beat either. And you can tell by the way they drew off from the field that was really a throwdown, just the length of the stretch. Very exciting and two very, very nice colts. And, you know, just Essential Quality just seems to have that will to win. And, you know, Louis fits him so well and has that confidence in him. And it was a race to the wire. And, you know, we got lucky. We got to turn the tables as far as finding our way to the winner's circle.
I know that you and my man, Darlie Dan Pride, were ultra pumped up. The whole team at Darlie and Godolphin was fired up for that win, and rightfully so. What was the conversation like with Sheikh Mohammed after the race?
Well, I think it was really, I didn't get to speak to him personally, just you know, just got the thumbs up and the excitement of it all. And as you well know, that was probably a big a day for Godolphin internationally. As you can imagine, they ran 1-3 in the English Derby that day. Charlie Appleby sent over two fillies to run in the Just a Game, a grade one for fillies on the grass, and ran 1-2 there. And then, you know, just to finish it off with Essential Quality's exciting win in the Belmont, that's really just very, very reflective of Sheikh Mohammed's breeding program and his enthusiasm for the international stage. And it just sort of encapsulates all that, all the good things that go on from the breeding to the way these horses are raised to the way they're campaigned, and ultimately to Sheikh Mohammed and his true excitement and, as I said, passion for competing on the international stages. And every now and then it goes right, which certainly was that Saturday.
What's the plan with Essential Quality for the second half of the season?
Second half, truthfully, the major objective, as I think you might well agree, is the Travers is a signature race for three-year-olds at Midsummer Derby, and it's rightfully so. You know, back at the mile and a quarter, it gives these three-year-old colts a chance to sort of recover that they've been on a pretty tiring and difficult Derby trail, if you will. And you know, that's probably the circle on the calendar for Essential Quality. And he had an easy work last weekend at Churchill, a work again this weekend, and then I think Brad's plans to ship him on up to Saratoga with an idea of probably the Jim Dandy, and with the main focus being the Travers.
Visiting with Godolphin president and racing manager Jimmy Bell here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Excuse me, Jimmy. Let's talk about, before we get to Maxfield in today's Stephen Foster, let's talk about Mystic Guide for a minute. Ultra-impressive winner of the Dubai World Cup. Will we see him, what, next week in the Suburban? Is that where he's going?
Yes, that's exactly right. You know, looking forward to it. We wanted to give him a longer vacation than he wanted to take, which is usually not the case for people or horses, but he was ready to get back to work a lot sooner than Mike wanted him to after his trip to Dubai and back. And looking very forward to this opportunity in the Suburban to get back on the racing trail, if you will. And, you know, his race out in Oakland, you know, really sort of served notice that transition from 3 to 4 was pretty dramatic. And then obviously that was underscored with his, again, emphatic win over with the Dubai World Cup. And, you know, trying to get that time, that's not an easy trip over or back to get back in that racing condition. So I think Mike feels very confident as far as his time off and time back on to be ready for the Suburban. And, you know, certainly that'll be a big test, and we'll see if we can't start the second half of the year off starting there.
And then you try to punch your ticket to the Breeders' Cup with a couple of contenders on the Saturday program at Churchill Downs. Maxfield, as I mentioned, going in the Stephen Foster. You have Antoinette in the Fleur de Lis. Both of those win in your ends for the respective divisions. Let's start with Antoinette for a minute. Give me the update on her.
Well, the update is that Florida Lee came up a lot tougher than we were hoping. I think that would be the update. As you can see, a little bit of a small, extremely competitive field. Latruska, you know, kind of run back quickly, but obviously showing she's grade one class and quality. The interesting thing about Antoinette, Billy feels, and rightfully so, is that she's probably equally effective on the dirt as she is on the grass. And so, you know, unfortunately, we had to scratch out of the stake up on Belmont Day. The turf got a little too soggy for her, and both she and Micheline had to scratch out of that. And it kind of makes you sort of redirect and start looking around differently. And so, you know, looking back through it, Billy said, listen, you know, this filly's been as effective on the dirt. And, you know, we sort of looked at the Florida Lee, and unfortunately there are some other pretty strong stars looking at it the same way. So I think we're in deep there, and, you know, let's just hope for the best. But there's some obviously small but a very, very quality field there.
The rest of the horses and the competition are in deep in the Stephen Foster, and that's because of the Godolphin color bearer, Maxfield. But this horse, 6 for 7 lifetime, he's overcome all kinds of adversity. Jimmy, we've talked about him on the show many, many times. He's as tough as they come, and now he tries to put it all together one more time in the Stephen Foster. What are you seeing from him since that big win in the Ali Sheba?
Well, I think really what we've seen is the turnaround in him mentally and toughness-wise for his trip out to California and the Santa Anita Handicap, where he, you know, he got beat a length and a half and was third. But more importantly, you know, Brendan came back and said, Jimmy, I think this, you know, nobody wants to lose, especially your unbeaten streak. But I think this probably made him grow up quite a bit. He said, I've absolutely seen a change in him mentally, not in an aggressive manner, but in a toughness manner, in sort of a race fight ready manner. And you probably saw that in the Alashiba that, you know, he really was ready to pounce when asked and drew off very impressively. And quite honestly, he's trained very, very well since the Alashiba, looking very forward to the Stephen Foster because, you know, a little unfortunate, and it wasn't the soundest thing. It's just that it happens to these colts. He had a little chip here. He had a this, that, and the other. He had a start and stop 2-year-old and 3-year-old campaign. And the whole hope and idea was to see if we couldn't get a full body work for him and to show, you know, that he is a very sound, very talented, very versatile colt. And, you know, here we are into our fourth or so race of the season and looking like he's going to have a solid summer and fall to come. So this is a big race to add on to what he's been able to put together, and looking forward to it. But Brendan could not be any more excited to run him than holding on for tomorrow or today.
That's really interesting, the mental aspect of Maxfield and almost refocus. It's almost like an athlete or a team, Jimmy, that's on a big win streak, and they get upset and they lose a game. They get beaten in an event, and it kind of refocuses them. I didn't know that horses were like that too, that Maxfield could get refocused again.
I think so, and I think it was probably, I think it was a great analogy. You know, he certainly wasn't looking past that race. It was 1.25 miles. It was the first time. You're shipping across country. You know, all those elements that if you're going to be at that top echelon, you've got to be able to, you know, that's part of performing at that level. And I think that it showed Brendan that, you know, there was some improvement to come from him. Physically, he always continued to impress, but what he said he saw, I really see a different look in his eye, the way he's going about it. And he felt like he saw the first glimpse of that in the Ali Sheba. So, you know, we're looking and hoping to see that element doesn't continue. But, you know, the feeling in the camp going in is that it is.
Yeah, maybe the horses in California just kind of poked the bear and woke up the sleeping giant, if you will. We'll see if Maxfield continues that momentum later today in the Stephen Foster. Jimmy Bell, can't thank you enough for spending a little time. Thanks for the updates. All the best going forward, and keep up the wonderful work with Godolphin.
Well, we're very, very grateful and very pleased, and you know, let's hope it continues.
Keep it rolling, my friend.
Okay, thank you so much. Appreciate chatting with you all the time. You know that.
Good luck, Jimmy. Jimmy Bell here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. They're just fantastic insight. I mean, you know, he has done such an amazing job, and not just Jimmy. He has a team surrounding him, but really, he's the man steering the ship there for Godolphin and has really done a tremendous job, and they are loaded. You could really make a case that they're sitting there with a Breeders' Cup Classic trifecta in their back pocket right now, but everybody has to get there, and Jimmy's question back to me was great. Can you separate them? Who wins it? Can you put them in order? 1, 2, 3? I don't know if I can. Not right now. I mean, I guess Mystic Guide, probably the most accomplished. But I don't know. Maxfield, pretty good too. And now you got a classic winner in essential quality. So wonderful stuff. My thanks to Jimmy for taking the time here this morning. When I come back after your Lexus Legends of the Turf, I'll talk about the entire Stephen Foster program with Churchill Director of Communications Darren Rogers. Still to come, you're going to hear from two-time Stephen Foster winning trainer Dallas Stewart and Fausto Gutierrez, who will saddle Latruska in today's Fleur de Lis. That's all ahead right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the wonderful folks at Lexus of Lexington.
There have been performances by horses on the racetrack that bear more than considerable note, and there have been horses of the same milk over a period of time. This is a story of a combination of both, a horse and a performance that are five-star in every category. Quote, "It won't be the same on Saturdays without Kelso, will it?" said the fat man. That perfunctory statement sums up the whole story. The story of Kelso and the Jockey Club Gold Cup run on the Saturday of Halloween in October of 1964. It was a golden autumn day for a golden thoroughbred, 51,000 fans on hand at Belmont Park, Long Island's grand dame of racing. They had come to pay homage to one in a million as a horse. People had waited 40 years for Kelso. There had been nothing like him since Exterminator in the 1920s and Man o' War of the same vintage. All there were great horses in the interim, Gallant Fox, Citation, Equipoise, Discovery, Native Dancer, Cavalcade, Count Fleet, 20 Grand, Armed Swaps, and Tom Fool, to recount just a few. There were some that occupied a very special place in the hearts of racing fans. The beloved Seabiscuit, War Admiral, Whirlaway, Alsab, Stymie, and Carryback, just to name a few. None had that rare and indefinable quality of absolute excellence of Exterminator, Man o' War, and now Kelso. His greatest single contribution to racing was in being a hero, a role model to be loved and admired. Not because of physical beauty, since he was actually underweight. And he was awkward and often seemed ill at ease. He was sort of like a homely girl who had donned her very best party dress but was doomed as a wallflower. He had a lackluster coat, and no matter what they tried to do to dress him up, as it were, he was still just plain old Kelso. You had to shake your head at Kelly because you could never imagine him to be a champion among champions. The Jockey Club Gold Cup was virtually a permanent trophy of his, and he'd won it 4 years in a row. Unheard of. But here he was, trying to make it five in a row at the age of seven over the grueling two-mile distance. This was to be the last race run in New York for him. After some 1¾ miles of the Great Classic, he was second, right behind the dead-game Little Roman Brother, who'd given it all he'd had. Then Milo Valenzuela made his move aboard Kelso, and he charged at the leader. There was no need for the crowd to vent an encouraging "Come on, Kelly," as they'd done when he waged his stretch battles with Iron Peg in the Suburban and Gunbo in the Woodward. It was all over at the quarter pole, and everybody there knew it. And then an awesome thing happened. The 51,000 on hand went eerily silent for a moment, and then, just as woe on cue, 102,000 hands began to clap in unison, hands beating rhythmically in time with Kelso's stride. Cadence clapping a la European style for admiration of something special. It was like a Mahler concerto of human emotion. Kelso crossed the wire, a winner in his fifth consecutive Jockey Club Gold Cup in a time of 3:19.1, a new track and American record for 2 miles. There was a wistful sadness inherent in the lengthening shadows of that fall afternoon. Summer was taking its last breath. Winter's frostiness lay just around the corner. The world would grow older, and so would Kelso. Like the fat man said, it won't seem like Saturday without Kelso. No, and there probably will never be another Saturday like that one, October 27, 1964, when Kelly won his fifth straight Jockey Club Gold Cup in what may very well have been the single greatest moment in all of thoroughbred racing's marvelous history.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
Pin Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
The Spring Summer Meet is live now at Gulfstream Park. Live racing Thursday through Sunday through September 26th. Look forward to the Summit of Speed on Saturday, July 3rd, and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series, which begins July 31st. Stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone using First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For the stakes schedule, tips and analysis, and seat reservations, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site tickets are limited, so book your seats now.
This week's Flair Fact is brought to you by Achieve Equine, maker of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Sweating is a horse's primary mechanism for cooling, especially during intense exercise. Horses with a condition known as anhidrosis are commonly called non-sweaters and can exhibit exercise intolerance or poor performance with its mild form. For more Flair facts, visit flairstrips.com/learn.
This is Steve Asmussen. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And here comes Maxfield quickly coming after these leaders as they round the far turn. Maxfield with a three-wide sweep to the front. Roadster has to fight back. Visitant down toward the rail. The three of them stacked across the track off the turn. Maxfield takes charge top of the lane. It's Maxfield in front now by two. Now Maxfield by three. Visitant fights on from second. Roadster's back into third. There's one furlong to go. Maxfield fully extended on the front end. Visitant is running hard but is still second. Roadster trying to hang on to third. Chess Chief late on the scene but nobody catches Maxfield, who glides under the wire, the three-length winner, over Visitant second, Chess Chief, Sonneman, or Roadster.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. That call you just heard, courtesy of Churchill announcer Travis Stone, the Ali Sheba Maxfield cruising to an easy victory on the Kentucky Oaks undercard. He's back in action later today in the Stephen Foster, which of course is a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Classic Division. He is the 4-5 morning line favorite. You heard my interview with Godolphin president and racing manager Jimmy Bell in the previous segment. They say that Maxfield has turned the corner mentally since his first career and only career defeat in the Santa Anita Handicap back in March. And if that is the case, that is bad news for the competition later today. Joined now by Darren Rogers, who is the Director of Communications at Churchill. Darren, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mike. How are you?
Doing very well. I said this at the top of the show, that Churchill is going out with a bang with this closing day card. This is fantastic, man. What a program.
Yeah, we really are. It's been a wonderful spring meet. You know, it was so refreshing to welcome back the fans after, you know, the past year that we've all endured. And, you know, they're the heartbeat of the game, and it was just great to see them back. And they came out in droves, and they responded to our product throughout the spring meet. And, you know, to finish it with a 12-race program today that features, you know, seven stakes capped by the Stephen Foster, it's the perfect way to go out. Go out on top.
Yeah, go out on top indeed. We'll talk about today's program, but let's start by looking back on the meet that was, if you will. I think they say the Masters is a tradition unlike any other. I think you could say that this year's Kentucky Derby is one that is unlike any other, at least to this point anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, at the time, you know, well, first of all, it was strange capping the crowd, but it beat having no fans, you know, like we did in 2020 of September. There was an event like any other. You know, to have the 51,000 fans on hand, we had good weather. It was such a great positive vibe. And really, it was an overall tremendous week. And, you know, obviously, Medina Spirit crossed the wire first. About a week later, the game was, you know, kind of turned upside down when word leaked out from the Baffert camp that the horse tested positive. And so, you know, we fully expect that, you know, from a legal standpoint, this is probably going to continue on for a while now. And I don't think it'll reach any true resolution. But, you know, I can't express, you know, enough about what a great job Ben Huffman and his team of individuals in the Churchill Downs Racing Office, what a great job they did putting on a great product throughout this this entire stand. We had a couple of great night racing events. The Twilight Thursdays, Mike, continue to grow. You know, the last two, for example, on Thursday, we had 9,700 people out here on a Thursday. You know, yeah. Enjoying dollar beers, the food trucks, some music, and eight live races. And it's just a great, great vibe. If anybody in the area hasn't taken part of the Twilight Thursdays, when we open back up in September, check it out, because it's really growing in recent years, and it's been a lot of fun.
One thing that was different and I thought was really cool when it came to this year's Oaks and Kentucky Derby is that when you came in, you received a free program. They were free for the taking, and all of the food and beverages, including alcohol, was complimentary with your price of admission. Was that kind of an experiment this year, Darren, and something we might see more of in the future?
We're going to talk about it. That was more dependent on the situation from a COVID standpoint with protocols, but it was very well received. In fact, I know a number of different people that said, "Hey, we'll pay twice as much if you can cap the crowd at 50,000 like you did this year." So one of the unrealistic parts of that is, you know, I think it's very important for us to offer, we've always said it, we want to offer different experiences for every different customer base. And, you know, this past year we had a limited, you know, capacity of about 25-30% in the Churchill Downs infield, which worked out to be about 15,000 to 18,000 people. They couldn't come over to the front side. I missed people around the paddock area this year. And if you have that general admission experience, which has to be at a lower price point, it's tough to roll in an all-inclusive food and beverage. And then, you know, how do you separate those folks? So we're going to talk through those things, maybe be able to offer that type of experience in different segments of our vast facility. But it went over very popular with the folks that were on hand at this year's Derby.
Yeah, you know the logistics far better than I do. And I know you mentioned that you're going to talk about it internally. But I think that idea, that concept, not just for Churchill, but maybe on big race days, even like a Breeders' Cup, where there's a premium package that includes complimentary hospitality throughout the day, you know, an all-inclusive package, if you will. I think that's a really interesting concept, and I think you may have struck on something here.
Yeah, it was like, you know, I wasn't, you know, going into it when you do something for the first time, you plan, and then you hope it works, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was impressed how very little lines there were. That was the whole idea going in, was to reduce traffic at windows, and that was exactly the case. So that was a home run on the operations team and Levy Restaurants, our concessionaire.
Yeah, and the food was fantastic. I couldn't take advantage of the complimentary alcoholic beverages because I was working, but I did hit the beef brisket stand a couple of times, and that was outstanding.
That a boy.
Yeah, tremendous. Beef brisket sliders. What could be better than that? And the Kentucky Derby. I mean, it's just, you know, perfect. All right, let's talk about what's happening on this closing day program. I mentioned the grade 2 Florida Lee. You've got the Stephen Foster as well. Talk to me about the program and some of the highlights.
Well, I mean, the highlights, you know, obviously we have, the 12-way race program. And because Latruska is going to be a heavy favorite in the Florida Lee, you know, that race sits outside the sequence of the Derby City 6, the late pick 5, and the late pick 4. And, you know, it's an all-stakes Derby City 6, along with the pick 5 and the pick 4. And I just think it's very competitive. We've got the kicking it off in the 7th race as I flip through my program, which, of course, Mike is sticking together, as you know that can do at times. Is the $150,000 war chant for 3-year-olds at a mile on turf. This is an interesting race where we see Helium getting back to, off the dirt. Of course, came from Woodbine, was racing on the synthetic. Now a lot of people believe that the synthetics act more like the turf. I think Helium is very well spotted in here. Starring in My Dreams is also a little interesting. For me, it's not a move that has always been successful for trainer Dallas Stewart, going from dirt to grass, but I think this is in a good spot. The horse will be forwardly, positioned, ready to pounce, and I think he's fast enough to compete in that race. The 2-year-old races are very interesting, with the 8th race is the debutante for the 2-year-old fillies. We've had some, really nice, performances for trainer Norm Cassie with some 2-year-olds this meet, one of which is on the ones and twos. The 8 horse was a very nice winner in its debut under Florent Giroux at 6-1. And Norm was telling us recently that, he's changed his training a little bit with some of the 2-year-olds, where, maybe he trained them real hard a year ago and they might have been over the top. Now he's kind of letting them I'm not going to say race into shape, but he's not training them as hard going into their first couple of starts. And when you look at that perspective and you see a horse like On the Ones and Twos debut and win by a length and 3/4 at 6-1, that's impressive. There's room to move forward. And I'm looking forward to seeing how that horse runs. The 9th race is the grade 3 Bashford Manor, going 6 furlongs for the 2-year-olds. And a majority of the horses in here are the colts and geldings. I do find it interesting that a 20-1 shot on the outside, She's Got Attitude, could have run in the debutante, but chose to run here. So that's an interesting move for trainer John Ennis. I, however, am going to be looking elsewhere. I think I would spread in this race, using maybe a horse like Norm Cassie's Glacial, the 4, the 9 Red Run for Steve Asmussen, and then a very interesting horse for Todd Pletcher, Double Thunder, debut winner at Monmouth Park, was very interesting. Now I'm going to give you a bomb that I would not leave off your ticket. The 10 horse Rising Outlaw for Jim Chapman, horse won its debut at the maiden claiming level at Indiana Grand, but it was fast. That was fast enough. That horse, these young horses can sometimes jump up and surprise, and I'm going to include that horse underneath in my ticket. And, of course, we have the Wise Dan on the card, really a showdown between Set Piece and Some Like It Hot Brown. Some Like It Hot Brown probably has the tactical edge. This is a race with not a lot of pace, but Set Piece for Brad Cox and Judmont, I mean, they just love Churchill Downs, winning 3 of 4 starts. I remember that his debut, he was well-meant in the U.S. here at Churchill. And I just think this horse is has a very, very bright future and is showing it. And then the last race on the program, the 12th race on the card, is the Teppan for the 3-year-old fillies, going a mile on the turf. And I'm just Brian Lynch and Toby's Heart, the 8 horse, 4-1 on the line. Javier Castellanos up. If you look at that race 2 back at Keeneland, albeit it was sprinting going 5.5 furlongs, I think this horse has a bright future. Ship to Belmont for the Soaring Softly. You know, I think this is going to be a little softer competition. I'm willing to forgive that. Takes the blinkers off, and if we can get around 4-1, I think Toby's Heart is an interesting play.
And at that point, you just go cash your ticket and head to the bar and enjoy the rest of the evening after what is going to be a fantastic Stephen Foster program. The Stephen Foster Race
really
11,
is.
Again, the favorite in there, Maxfield. Darren, is it Maxfield and everybody else, or do you see an upsetter in this race?
No, I really do think it's Maxfield and all others. I mean, I do appreciate the others getting in there to give it a try. You know, and I wouldn't use a stone cold, you know, exacta, but, you know, like a horse like, you know, like Maxfield to me, he's just faster than these others. But, you know, a wide opinion of the second choice might be Silver Dust. And I just don't think this horse is as fast as he was a year ago. Now, that might be good enough to run second against this group. But I'm just not convinced that he's as good as he was during his six-year-old year. So I may be looking elsewhere underneath. Where I end up just yet, I don't know. I got a few more hours to figure it out.
Well, listen, man, you have done a tremendous job once again with the meet. And, again, Ben Huffman, the entire team at Churchill, just really, really great job with this spring meet. And we'll look forward to when the doors open again. But enjoy Stephen Foster night and really appreciate you taking some time to walk through the program with me today.
Absolutely. Don't forget, it's an afternoon program. I know you said night, but, you know, it's because we've used to run the Stephen Foster from 2012 to 2019 in the evening. We moved it to the end of the meet, and it's an afternoon program. First post at 12:45, and you can watch the racing all throughout the day on FS2 on America's Day at the Races.
Perfect. Yeah, 12:45 Eastern, first post, and 12 races to take in, including all those graded stakes. Should be one heck of a day of thoroughbred racing. Really appreciate it, Darren. Thanks so much, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, pal.
All right, Darren Rogers, Director of Communications at Churchill Downs. Yeah, good stuff. Really, really good program. Time now to get you set to bet the races, and to do that, we turn our attention to today's first bet.
And now, today's first bet.
Today's first bet comes in race 5 at Pimlico with a post of 2:41 Eastern. It is number 6, Our Nikki L, who is 5-1 on the morning line, has a 26% win projection from first bet, a 12-point spread between this filly and next closest rivals. Think about that. Rates number 1 in first bet's 4 most important handicapping factors for this race. And race 5 is the second leg of the $1.2 million Rainbow Six jackpot carryover pool. Our Nikki L was a 10-1 runner-up in a similar spot last time out, and the Penn National-based filly gets her second spin over the Pimlico surface. Number 5, Our Nikki L in race 5 at Pimlico is today's first bet. And I'm back with more in 60 seconds right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number 1, st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races. Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
About one third of the way through, 1 hour down, 2 to go. When I come back, I'll tell you all about what's ahead here on the Equine Forum this morning. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
McKinsey, new for 2021 at Gainesway. The son of Kentucky Derby winner Street Sense, McKinsey was named a TDN Rising Star following his five-length debut victory at Santa Anita and was an undefeated Grade 1 winning two-year-old, the fastest juvenile of 2017. McKinsey scored four Grade 1 victories in his career with Grade 1 wins at 2, 3, and 4.
Furlong to go. McKinsey is in front. Axelrod set down by Joe Bravo. Mike Smith working on McKinsey. McKinsey holding on. Axelrod is full out. McKinsey is clear as they come down to the finish. Baffert, Smith, McKinsey. They've done it. McKinsey has it by two.
Coming to the final furlong, McKinsey's in front. Yoshida runs after him on the outside. Vino Rosso is third. McKinsey comes by the 16th pole, and he's going to do it. McKinsey has won the Whitney.
11 triple-digit buyer speed figures, earnings over $3.4 million. McKinsey standing at Gainesway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
I want to get back to being in my community group.
I want to continue having a soccer season.
So I can throw parties again.
So I can go to her parties.
It'd really be nice to dine in instead of getting delivery for a change.
So I can feel safe and protected for myself and my students.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be? Visit getvaccineanswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, comes to you every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern here on HRRN. Bobby Newman joins me for racing from tracks like Churchill Downs, Belmont Park, and Santa Anita. We'll also bring you interviews with all of the players, both big and small, in thoroughbred racing. You can tune in to Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live on your home for all of racing's biggest events at horseracingradio.net.
This is Elliot Walden, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, remember, if you are into hunting, fishing, just the outdoors in general, you want to check out the new Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. So if you're visiting Central Kentucky for the sales, if you're visiting for the race meets, whatever it might be, or if you are listening locally in the Central Kentucky market, make sure you check them out. I, you know, tell you every week that I really have two passions. Well, three, really, if you count the outdoors. It's horse racing, it's the Pittsburgh Steelers, and it's the outdoors. And those are the three things I love. And Whitetail Heaven Outfitters, the Elite Outdoor Superstore, has something for every outdoorsman. They are just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road. They are owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley. And if you're into hunting deer, turkey, ducks, whatever it might be, go see them. They even have two indoor archery ranges. It's the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. You won't be disappointed. All right, busy second hour coming up. And then the third hour, it just keeps on rolling. Hour two kicks off with Dallas Baker, who is the man behind BetMakers Technology Group. They are introducing a new wagering platform coming up in New Jersey that is just going to, in my opinion, revolutionize what's happening in the sport of thoroughbred racing from the wagering perspective. So stay tuned for that coming up momentarily. Unsung Heroes presented by Claiborne comes your way at 9:20. I visit with longtime Keeneland and Churchill Clerk of Scales, Javier Torres. That's going to be an unbelievable visit. Can't wait for that one. And then Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history right around 9:50. I'll take a look at some historical dates in racing history toward the end of Hour 2. In the Room with Sean Clancy comes your way in Hour 3. He visits with Monmouth's top jock, Jose Ferrer. Dallas Stewart with me in the third hour of the program, as is trainer Fausto Gutierrez. So a lot of things to get to coming up in the next 2 hours. Poll question today. I'll tell you more about that when I come back. It is time to segue into Hour 2. We'll do that next, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events. Hour 2 of 3 rolling on. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. Welcome back to the program. If you missed any portion of the first half of the show, first hour of the program, my interview with Jimmy Bell from Godolphin or Darren Rogers from Churchill Downs, both interviews, those guys were just fantastic this morning. If you missed them, head back and listen to the podcast of this show after I finish up at 11 a.m. Eastern. You can do that at horseracingradio.net. You can check out all of our shows on our website. You can listen at your leisure, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. Trainer talk this week, by the way, was a lot of fun. If you haven't heard it, go back and listen. It's a one-hour show, obviously every Wednesday. I spend an hour visiting with a trainer about their life and their career. And this week I had the chance to talk with Michelle Giangiulio. Now, that's not a household name. It's not Todd Pletcher, not Steve Asmussen, you know. But her story is fantastic, and she is a very, very bright young woman, and I think she's going to have a lot of success in this game. She worked for some very prominent people, including trainer Kelly Breen, and she has really taken her lessons to heart and just getting started with her training career, still looking for that first winner, but I know it's going to come shortly, and there'll probably be plenty for Michelle Giangiulio. So go back and check out the Trainer Talk show at your leisure. You can also check out yesterday's Weekend Stakes Preview presented by Naira Betts. That's up there with the selections for all the big races, Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman, and the BristNet.com call-in show as well is there for you on our website, horseracingradio.net. All right, well, I told you this second hour of the program. Well, first of all, before I introduce my guest here to kick off the second hour of the program, I did want to update you on the poll question. Today's poll question, I think this is going to be really interesting to see how it all shakes out. If your goal is to win a Breeders' Cup race in November, which horse would you rather have right now? Latruska or Maxfield? Both horses going to be 4-5, at least. They're both going to be heavy favorites today in their respective divisions, the Fleur de Lis and the Stephen Foster. But if your goal is to win a Breeders' Cup race in November, which horse would you rather have right now, June 26th? Latruska or Maxfield? You can go to at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook to weigh in, or you can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. If you don't do social media, simply send me an email and let me know which horse you would prefer to have at this point. Well, I do get a chance now to welcome in Dallas Baker, who is with BetMakers Technology Group. I told you as I was getting ready for the second hour of the program just moments ago that there is a new wagering format, a platform coming to New Jersey and quite potentially to the rest of the United States. It is not new in other countries, but it is new here in the United States. I think it's going to revolutionize the sport. I'll tell you about it as soon as I introduce Dallas, who is indeed this week's Industry Star of the Week. This segment presented by Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. His success, he knows, is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, South Bend, and recent 2021 stakes winners Pacific Gale and Nikki DeVest, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the upcoming major sales. Without further ado, Dallas Baker from BetMakers Technology Group is with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Dallas, appreciate the visit.
Thanks, Mike, and a great intro. I was happy listening away to that. Thank you very much.
Well, I appreciate you sitting through that. But, yeah, I thought who better to make this week's Industry Star of the Week than you and the team at BetMakers, because I truly believe in what you're doing, and I really think that what you and the team have worked tirelessly to put together, and it's going to be coming to fruition. I don't want to steal your thunder, but you have worked tirelessly for more than a year now. I think this is going to be so good for the sport of thoroughbred racing. So take it away. Fill me in.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I mean, we do too, and that's been one of it has been whilst it's great for our business, but it's also a labour of love, because everyone at BetMakers, and as we've spoken before, and as I'm sure everybody who's listening can tell, where I've got a pretty good Australian accent, and we're an Australian-based company, and been passionate racing followers for all of our lives, and lucky enough to work in this great industry, and also now lucky enough, as you said, to hopefully have done something that can be of significant change and significant benefit for the industry over here with fixed odds betting coming into play and opening up hopefully a whole new source of wagering revenue to the industry, which with the right modelling then filters back down to all the participants, the horsemen and everybody who's involved in this great game of racing. Based on a similar model that was introduced into Australia probably about 10 to 12 years ago when online wagering was deregulated. And again, same thing, that opened it up to all the licensed wagering operators or sports betting operators, whatever way you want to define it. And, you know, in that time in Australia, we've seen a doubling of the handle on racing. Obviously, this is, subject to inflationary figures, but in general numbers, a doubling of handle on racing, and in turn, a doubling of the prize monies, which is obviously one of the best guides to the health of the horse racing industry. So, hopefully, this is with the legislation getting through the Senate and now on the governor's desk to be signed. This is the starting point of that process happening in the U.S.
Yeah, it's great that this has advanced to the governor's desk, and hopefully Governor Phil Murphy will put his signature on there before too long. I know you're expecting that signature sometime in the next, week to 10 days? Is that fair to say?
Well, fingers crossed, yes.
Yeah.
It's budget week here in New Jersey, so they've got the politicians have got one or two more things on their minds. But, yeah, with it getting through now, we've sort of basically – fingers crossed that we can be full steam ahead for Governor Murphy to be taking the first bet leading into the Haskell, hopefully on the Friday before Haskell weekend. And the Haskell, obviously, the feature race at Monmouth Park, and that being on July 17 this next month. So that's the plan. That's the fingers crossed. With the legislation dropping, we've also got a lot of things to get to filter through with the regulatory bodies here, the DGE and the Racing Commission. But all things being equal and smoothly, that's our aim, and hopeful we can have the first ceremonial bet by Governor Murphy, just as he did when the PASPA laws were repealed now 3 years ago or thereabouts. And with also the fingers crossed that Fixed Odds Racing can have some of the success that sports betting has done. And if we can have a minor success of that, it's been a huge success, obviously, with the phenomenon that is sports betting now in the U.S.
For people, Dallas, that are hearing the term fixed odds wagering for the very first time, it is indeed exactly what it sounds like. Fixed odds wagering will allow bettors to basically make a bet and retain the odds at the time of their bet. It's different than parimutuel wagering, where the odds fluctuate and it's not final until the actual race goes off. This is very much akin to betting a future wager, let's say, right, where you get a price 8-1, 10-1, and that's the price you get. If the horse goes down to 2-1, it doesn't matter. You're locked in at that 8 or 10-1, which is kind of one of the things that really appeals to me about fixed odds wagering. So walk me through the process. You get the approval. Everything's up and running. How are people going to be able to participate, and how does it actually work when somebody goes to make a bet?
All right, so I suppose I'll go to the what would sort of happen from the life cycle of a bet. So we're here Saturday morning. So I'll use Monmouth as the example, because Monmouth has been the track that we've been in partnership with Dennis Drazen's fantastic leadership, and as he's been a shining light in the leadership for racing and racing administrators in the United States of America, naturally. So for a Monmouth meeting, just say this is Saturday, 2 weeks' time, isn't it? If that's the right timing, and it's Haskell Day. 3 weeks' time, I should say, and it's Haskell Day, and the fields for the Haskell would have come out on Wednesday or thereabouts. We would have had markets up for them probably, you know, Wednesday afternoon, worst case Thursday lunchtime. So from that time, those markets are active and you have a marketplace. So, you know, just say the favourites of the Haskell at the moment's at 2-1 or whatever it is, that would be, you know, that could have gone up at 2-1 on Thursday. Those prices fluctuate around. It's a liquid marketplace. The market's always moving. And this becomes one of the exciting things of fixed odds betting. It's not just trying to back the winner, but it's also trying to assess how the market's moving and whether the horse is going to shorten or lengthen, where you can then try to get the best price. So, like, as you said, your horse might end up going off at even money, but if you've got that at 3-1, you've got a horse that's actually, that you've got extra percentage chances to increase the potentials for you to win. And of course, then you've still got that in comparison to the tote as well too. So both of the it adds an extra segment to the market. It adds an extra potential way for people to bet. So that's great for the customer being the punter. And anything that's better for better for the consumer is usually better for the beneficiary of that consumer. In this case, it's the racing industry. So basically, for a feature race day at least, from the moment, from pretty much not long after the fields come out, betting opens up, and right, that goes all the way through until the race starts. And basically, then you just work out what price you want. You know, you might back one that shortens in, which is great. You might back something that, or if your horse shortens in for the other danger in the race that you think blows out, so you can end up backing both of them, and both of them are going around as a good winner for you if you can play the play getting that right price. So it's a lot like a stock exchange play where you're trying to buy at the lowest price and sell at the highest price. So it's it becomes a lot like that, but obviously you're backing your horse to win, and yeah, so you can bet all the way up into the race, and hopefully in the Saturdays coming forward, I'm on the horn with you saying, oh, there's been this massive betting plunge. You know, a huge betting stable is really, really locked into their first starting 2-year-old or something along those lines. Excuse me. And you know, you get this great atmosphere of a trading floor type atmosphere all the way in the lead up into the races, and that, I think, in itself creates a lot of excitement in it, and it creates a great avenue for media outlets like yourself to be sort of talking about the actual movement of money on horse racing, which to me is what I love about horse racing, I suppose. It's my number one passion of it. So it creates a great marketplace and a great exciting way for horse players to react to it, because, as you said, obviously with the tote, which the tote needs to exist in the betting ecosystem, but it creates that extra level of it, so you're actually getting your price rather than just waiting for the race to jump. And as you know, that there can be great variations in that. So being able to play the two off against each other is a great way of betting too. And, you know, anything you can do from the punter and make it better for them, I think makes it better for the industry.
Where will people be able to make their fixed odds wager? Will it be a separate website, Dallas, or will it be tied into the Monmouth website? How does that work?
Well, the legislation enables basically wagering operators and racetracks to hold licenses for it. So,
okay,
using New Jersey as the example, I think there's 39 available licenses or something like that from the sports betting. So all of those licensed operators can choose to offer fixed odds betting once the law's been approved, and all the racetracks themselves have licenses as well. So the racetracks, similar to what's happened with the sports betting skins that have gone out there, so that enables them to do that. But the good thing is too about the legislation. One thing that we wanted to make sure was the industry is protected. So you just can't have a bookmaker that goes off and just says, "I'm betting on everyone's content," when they can't bet on simulcast venues or other content without actually having a commercial agreement in place with the track. Where that's important is to make sure that every revenues or betting handle that's taken on a specific meeting, that some of that does go back to the track and therefore the horseman, and, you know, depending on what that state's model is, that it filters down, and in the similar way that the revenues collected from from tote money goes back to the industry in a similar sort of ratioed out way, depending on what the state regulations are or the way that the racing commissions and the tracks there decide to distribute it. So that's one of the most important things that happens with it, that the bookmakers just can't go out and willy nilly bet on content unless they have a pre-existing agreement with the tracks. But yeah, so basically from a New Jersey point of view, it'll be whatever wagering operator wants to jump on board with it, and the tracks themselves, if they desire to do that, to be able to offer that as well too. And that's what the legislation is, an enabling legislation that allows it to happen. But the good thing about it is it's an opt-in legislation that if you don't want to play, you don't have to play. So which I think is great, and it protects the industry very well.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's an exciting time for racing in New Jersey, and I think it's going to be exciting for other states across the country as well when this is introduced to those other states too. Have about 1 minute left, Dallas, before I have to wrap things up, but I will ask you that question about other states. Is that the plan now, to start looking at bringing fixed odds wagering to other states?
Definitely, yeah. So we've had lots of discussions with lots of the other states. The general position was to watch and see what happened in New Jersey. Naturally, I think that's probably now also then the next stage is for us to get it up and running fully and functioning. But in the meantime, yeah, we'll be discussing things with a lot of the other states. And look, we see the rollout again, referring back to the how after PASPA worked, that state by state, the states that have embraced sports betting will probably be the most likely states to embrace fixed odds betting. Hopefully some of those states only require regulatory interpretation, which would make the process a lot quicker. But if it's required legislation, we really hope that the model that we've created, or that it's been created in New Jersey, would be followed, because I think that's fairest for the wagering operators, and most importantly, it's fairest for the industry, and make sure that all the boxes are ticked to make sure that all the funding goes to the right spots.
Fantastic. Dallas Baker with BetMakers Technology Group here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Dallas, congratulations on getting it to this point. I know it's been a long journey, and can't wait to see what the future holds for fixed odds wagering here in the United States. Should be exciting.
Nor can we, Mike, and thanks very much for your time. And, look forward to you talking to you in the coming weeks with a bit more progression.
All right, keep it rolling, my friend.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, Dallas Baker here, this week's Industry Star of the Week. It is truly something that I think is going to be such a benefit to the sport of thoroughbred racing, not just in New Jersey, but as it rolls out across the country. I think you're going to hear a lot more about fixed odds wagering, and congrats to the team at BetMakers for making it all come together, and to Dennis Drazen, the CEO and chairman up at Monmouth Park, too. Just a really good job on everybody's part putting that together. When I come back, it is time for a very special edition of Unsung Heroes. I think you're going to enjoy this segment. It's presented by Claiborne, and then I'll take you on a stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Broken Vow, a top 15 lifetime active sire with over 170 black type horses, 90 black type winners, and approaching $80 million in progeny earnings. In 2020, Broken Vow produced Saratoga Springs winner Stan the Man and the Speedy M Primus, winner of the $700,000 turf sprint. Juvenile stakes horses include the Grass is Blue and Chasing Kara. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Spring Meet is back at Churchill Downs with live racing now through June 26th. And new this year, Stephen Foster Day has moved to a daytime card with seven total stakes races that include the Breeders' Cup Winning Year In Florida Lee for the Distaff Division and the Stephen Foster for the Classic Division. Churchill also has Twilight Racing starting at 5 p.m. each Thursday throughout the remainder of the meet. Add in the strong purses and you're not going to want to miss the Spring Meet at Churchill Downs. Get your tickets today at churchilldowns.com.
Live racing is back at Ellis Park starting this Sunday with a 31-day Run Happy Meet through September 4th. Admission is free with reserved seating available in the Sky Theater and Clubhouse through ellisparkracing.com. And for the first time, all Ellis Park races will be shown in high definition. Purses are scheduled to average a record $350,000 a day, including Kentucky Bred Maidens running for a track record $51,000. With 16 stakes and a 2-year-old program as good as anywhere in the country, Ellis Park is the place to be this summer. Visit ellisparkracing.com. Ellis Park, feel the thunder.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
This proven son of Giants Causeway has sired six millionaires, including Claiborne Farm stallion Lee. Recent top runners include graded stakes winner Plum Ali.
But it's going to be Plum Ali, and she's now 3-for-3.
Sharp Samurai, international star Shivaji, and Birdie Queen, plus these standout performers. In the ring, his yearlings sold up to $260,000. First Samurai, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Hello, this is Steve Cawthon, winner of the Triple Crown 1978 Aboard Affirmed, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Heroes in the world of sports are not uncommon. Oftentimes, thrusting themselves into the limelight through unimaginable feats.
Back behind the ball, Woods puts it.
And in! He has done it! Tiger is back! Tiger is back on top. Tiger Woods, the 2019 Masters champion.
And breathtaking performances.
Here's how you count to 8, 3, 2, 1. And for the 8th time, college basketball's national championship trophy is coming home to Kentucky.
But behind every great hero, there are others. Individuals who play a crucial role in the achievements of those we read about in the headlines. The ultimate team players. Content to stand behind the curtain, embracing their place as a vital part of a sport's success. In horse racing, these are the unsung heroes.
Well, and once again this morning, I do have the privilege of welcoming a true unsung hero in the sport of thoroughbred racing. He does a job that many of you may not even know exists, but it is vital to the success of our sport and vital to the success of those individuals who do indeed find themselves in the spotlight day in and day out. Please join me in welcoming Javier Torres, who has served as the clerk of scales at Keeneland and Churchill Downs for the past several years. It is a vital job, and he is with me now. Javier, first of all, congratulations on being this week's unsung hero.
Thank you for having me, and I appreciate you guys thinking about me in that manner.
Well, I know you don't look at yourself in that fashion, and you were destined to be in horse racing. You come from a racing family, but the way that you fell into becoming a clerk of scales, that's been a journey for you. Take me back to the beginning and tell me the story.
Well, like you said earlier, I mean, I was kind of born into the race, you know, the racing game. My dad rode races in Mexico. As you know, my older brother is a retired jockey. My younger brother rode races. I galloped horses for, you know, 23, 24 years. You know, working in, on the back side in the morning, it's mostly, you know, in the morning time. So I had the afternoons off. So I was looking for something to do in the afternoons, and I started working at Arlington Park in the paddock, as a paddock assistant. And I did that for a couple of years, and then finally a job in the jocks room came open as assistant clerk of scales. And at the time, Frank Gabriel Jr. was the racing secretary, and he approached me about, you know, if I was interested in the position, and I said, of course. So I applied for it, and sure enough, I got the job. And I was the assistant for a number of years, and in my travels, you know, south for the winter to New Orleans, I would stop here in Kentucky, and I filled in a few times for the gentleman who was the assistant clerk of scales here at Churchill and Keeneland. Eventually the position of clerk of scales became available here in Kentucky. And once again, the racing secretary, Ben Huffman, asked me if I was interested. I said, yeah, of course. He said, well, you know, to apply for it. And I did. And I, sure enough, I got the job, and that's how I became the clerk of scales here at Churchill and Keeneland and Kentucky Downs also. So, it just progressed, you know. I mean, I paid my dues. I worked long enough where eventually whoever was the clerk retired or moved on to a higher position. So that's how I got to be the clerk of scales here at the Kentucky track. So, and it's, and I mean, I think I've been the clerk of scales here at Churchill and Keeneland. I want to say maybe 17 years, maybe something like that.
Hasn't
so I've been
here
a long,
long
time.
Wow. I didn't know it had been that long.
Yeah, yeah. I started counting, and for sure Keeneland, I started in 2003, so it's been about that many years. So,
did I read somewhere, Javier, that even before you went down that path and started working in the racing office, and then of course eventually leading to being the clerk of scales, that you actually spent a little bit of time as a cook in the jocks room too?
I did. this was when I was still in high school, and I was rubbing horses during the summer at Arlington for Richard Hazelton, Scott Hazelton, who was an anchor on TVG. I worked for his dad in the morning, and I would run during the break time. I would run up to the jock's kitchen because everybody knows the best food on any racetrack is the jock's kitchen. So I would run up there to get something for breakfast, and it happened. So one morning, the young lady who was running the kitchen, Anna Gabriel, she was by herself, and she usually had someone in there helping her. I'm like, where's your helper? And she said, oh, she's sick. I said, well, do you need help? And she said, yeah, if you don't mind. I said, well, as soon as I get done at the barn, I'll come back and help you. She goes, man, that'd be great. So sure enough, I finished, you know, taking care of my horses, doing them up, and I came to the kitchen, and I put on an apron, and I started washing dishes and you know, cooking burgers or whatever she needed me to do. And it was fun. It was fun working in the kitchen. I had to be about 16 years old.
Yeah, you're not wrong about the best food at any racetrack being in the jocks room. It's amazing, you know. And people, you know, there's another thing that people listening to the program right now may not even realize, that, you know, that in every jocks room across the country, you're going to have a kitchen where the jockeys can grab some food in between the races. Usually it's not a lot because they're trying to keep their weight down, but that food is simply outstanding.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, I mean, every racetrack, and everybody, you know, all the racetrackers, trainers, and owners, they know that the best, you know, the best food is in the jocks room kitchen. A little story here in Chester Thomas, an owner, he always calls me. He goes, man, can I come up there and get a burger? I said, yeah, come on. I mean, they have burgers in the grandstand, but he always wants to come and get one in the jocks room because I guess he thinks they're better there.
Well, I can vouch for them personally. They're pretty good, especially here at Keeneland, by the way, where Jill Babe does a fantastic job with all of her food. She's incredible. Javier, what does a clerk of scales do? What does the job entail?
Well, everyone thinks right off the bat, clerk of scales, that basically that my job is to weigh the riders before they ride, and then the top four finishers after the race. They think that that's basically all the job entitles, and it's so much more. I mean, I'm basically in charge of all the jockeys, you know, to make sure they show up on time, which is anywhere from 30 to 40 jocks on a daily base. And then I have 13 valets, and the valets are the guys that saddle the horses. I mean, their primary job is to saddle the horses, and their secondary job is to take care of the jocks' equipment, their helmets, their goggles, their boots, make sure everything's clean and everything's, you know, safe and up to par. So, I mean, you're talking about, I mean, in the room on any given day, you know, I'm responsible for 50 people, you know. Wow. And there's a silks coordinator. He's in charge of maintaining the silks, make sure they're clean, make sure the right silks go on the right jock for every race. So all that falls under my privy. So I have to make sure that everything's basically running like a well-oiled machine. Another thing that my job entitles is any change, scratches, ownership corrections, you know, equipment changes, everything goes through me. The stewards give me the change, and then I funnel it through to different outlets, the press box, the bookkeeper, the announcer, the TV department. Like I said, everything that, you know, anytime you're at the track, or even if you're not at the track, and the little scrolling thing on the bottom of every racetrack says, you know, gives you changes, scratched horses, equipment changes, you know, overweights, all that goes through, gets channeled through the clerk of scales. At the end of every race, we have to take down a rundown. Basically, we have to put down the order of finish on a sheet, pay sheet, so the bookkeeper knows, you know, who gets paid what, you know, as far as jockeys, you know, who won the race, who was second, who was third, so on and so forth, so she can pay them accordingly.
Wow. Wow, there is a lot to it. It's not just weighing jockeys in and making sure that they're, you know, that they're the same weight that they are after the race that they were before. But that is part of it too. That's an important part of the job.
Yeah. I mean, and everyone always asks, well, you know, especially people who are new to the game or whatever, and they'll see me out by the winner's circle, and they'll see me weighing the, like I said, the top four finishers, and they'll say, oh, you know, why are you weighing them? Why are you weighing them? And I explain to them that in the program, they'll carry different weights for different races, depending on the condition of the race, so on and so forth, the horse's age, blah, blah, blah. So what we're checking for after the race is to make sure that they don't come back under that weight that's in the program. For example, if they're carrying 118 pounds, that's the jockey with a saddle. So we're making sure that he's not under 118. Now, they're always going to be over that number because there's certain equipment that they don't check with. They don't check with their helmet. They don't check with their safety vest. They don't check with their overgirth. That's considered safety equipment, so that doesn't count into the weight. So they're always going to be, two, three, 4 pounds over, always. And sometimes more on a muddy day or when it's raining, they're going to, because they're going to be soaking wet. So what we're basically checking for more than anything is that they don't come back underneath that weight.
Yeah, that they haven't somehow gotten lighter during the running of the race.
Exactly. That's considered cheating, basically. And knock on wood, that's never, ever happened while I was the clerk of scales. I hope it never does. The last time something like that occurred, I want to say, was in the Belmont Stakes. Maybe 10, 12 years ago, maybe further back. It was a horse trained by Kieran McLaughlin, I believe. And I think Rajiv Maharaj rode the horse. And to make the weight for the race, he had to add a 4-pound pad, which is a rubber pad that goes underneath the saddle, to make the weight. And during the running of the race, the pad slipped out from underneath the saddle and came out. So when Rajiv came back to the scale, he was under the weight. So he didn't carry the correct weight during the running of the race, so he got disqualified. And I want to say he finished third and got disqualified to last. So, I mean, that's a big deal because, that's a good amount of money for the owner. And for the jockey too, and I'm sure it caused Kieran too, but they went back and reviewed the film and saw that where the pad accidentally slipped out. So the jockey, nobody got in trouble for it. It was just a mishap. So that's the last time I can recall something like that happening.
Yeah, just incredible. Talking with a man who is indeed a true unsung hero in our sport, that is Javier Torres, the longtime clerk of scales here in Kentucky. He works at Keeneland, he works at Churchill Downs, and you heard him say he works at Kentucky Downs. And Javier, you talk about all the different jockeys that you're responsible for and the different valets that are all kind of underneath your watch, if you will, if you want to look at it in that fashion. One thing that's very unique about thoroughbred racing is that when, for example, in other sports like the NFL, both teams at halftime will go back to a separate locker room. That doesn't happen in horse racing. All of the competing jockeys are in the same room together. Do you ever have to be a referee when the competition gets a little bit heated?
Yeah. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. Yeah. I mean, like you said, in any other sport, the opposing team goes to their own locker room separately. In our sport, the competing jockeys, after races, they come back to the same locker room. So, if someone feels like they got maybe squeezed a little or put in a tight spot, yeah, they might. They come back and sometimes the argument gets heated and I personally don't condone any fighting in the room. I mean sometimes I'm walking back to the room and I come back and they tell me there was a little scrap and I never saw it or whatever. But in my presence, I don't allow it. I don't like it to happen. Accidents can happen and it can get serious. So I don't condone it. To say that it doesn't happen, I'm not going to lie. It does because, they're out there competing on these horses going 35, 40 miles an hour. I mean, you can easily get hurt or killed. I mean, it's not something where you can take very lightly, And I could imagine being in a race, getting put in a tight spot and, almost going down or something. I mean, you got to be on pins and needles and it's got to shake you up, So, yeah, they do. I mean, sometimes, they just basically words or, why did you do this and back and forth. And you know, and like I said, in my presence, I don't allow them to fight because, you know, they're like, oh yeah, let them do it. No, I don't believe in it. I don't like it. I don't like to see that, you know, but to say that it happens and, you know, if it happened before I get back to the room or afterwards when I'm not in my presence, you know, I don't know. I didn't see it, but you know, I don't, but you gotta understand, like I said, they're out there competing and in a split second. I mean, they can be down and hurt and it's dangerous, you know? So, I mean, you could understand how high the level of their adrenaline has got to be, you know? And I mean, to turn it on and off is not easy. I can't believe it's easy. So, yeah, I mean, sometimes I'm a referee. I mean, on one occasion, actually, during the Breeders' Cup at Churchill, and I mean, it was on national television, Javier Castellano and Calvin Burrell. I mean, they had, you know, there was a situation there, and I mean, they started swinging at each other, and I was caught in the middle. And I think they hit me more than they hit each other. So. But, yeah, on occasion, I got to be a referee, so.
Yeah, and I've seen you do your job. I've been fortunate enough to sit in the jocks room. We do a lot of interviews with jockeys leading up to big races, and you're always a tremendous help to us. That is another one of your jobs. You work with the media, Horse Racing Radio Network, NBC, TVG, whoever it might be that's looking to coordinate some type of interview with the jockeys. You're the one who oftentimes goes back into the jocks room, gets the jockey, brings them out, gets them to the area they need to be, and handles a lot of those timings too.
Yeah. I mean, that is part of the job too, and I think it's good, and I try to tell these young jocks or even jockeys, these jockeys that come from, you know, South American countries, that, you know, their English isn't that great. I tell them, listen, you need to work on speaking better English and learning English, you know, so those opportunities that you get to be interviewed. I mean, you're well-spoken, and, you know, people will say, oh, I don't understand what he's saying. You know, I mean, it's only going to benefit them, and it's going to benefit all of us, you know, in the industry. You know, I mean, basically, they're the rock stars of the game. You know, they're the stars. So any positive light that we can, you know, promote and get out there, I think it's a plus-plus, you know. And you guys, I mean, of course, I mean, you guys are putting, you know, our industry, you know, you're putting it out there to the masses. So, I mean, and you guys are all a pleasure to work with. You, Michelle, everybody at, you know, like you said, NBC, you know. So it's a pleasure to work with you guys because you guys are trying to make us look good, make the industry look good, and you know, and show, you know, show the betting public, you know, the fans, you know, what we're about, you know.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. And likewise, too, it's always a delight to work with Javier Torres, who is this week's unsung hero, presented by Claiborne. Javier, a couple more questions before we wrap up this segment here this morning. After, what'd you say, 17 years or so of being the clerk of scales at Keeneland and at the, you know, the Kentucky tracks here, do you view yourself as more of a father figure to some of the younger riders that come in there and you're teaching them, you know, about the way that they're going to handle themselves? Or is it more a brother figure where you're almost brother to brother when you're talking to them?
You know, I guess it depends. I mean, because it's such a vast group of guys in there, jockeys. You know, their ages range, you know, from, I mean, I got a jock in there that I think yesterday, an apprentice that just won a race. I think it's like 16, 17 years old. And, you know, then I got the older jocks, John Court, who, I mean, you know, he's a few years older than me, but, you know, he's a veteran jock and, I mean, the ultimate professional. So, I mean, what can I teach John that he, you know, that he doesn't already know? But yeah, I mean, to the older guys, yeah, they're more like, you know, like brothers, like a Corey Lannery, a Robbie Alvarado, those guys, because we're closer in age. But these young riders, you know, the Tyler Gaffleones, the Ortiz boys, you know, guys like that, you know, if I see that they need to, you know, hone on something or tap into something, yeah, I'll tell them, listen, I see this, you know, you know, you should try this. This might, you know, it might help you or whatever, you know, as far as, and not necessarily a riding point of view or whatever, because I never rode races, but anything to like I said, English, you know, better your English. It's only going to help you. You know, there's some of these jocks that, like I said, that they don't put that extra effort to learn how to speak better English, you know, and, you know, it's only going to help them. It's going to help their business. you know, and so the day they do get interviewed, they're well-spoken, people understand them, and, you know, they're making that extra effort. So stuff like that, you know, always, you know, be courteous, you know, say thank you and stuff like that, you know, just stuff that might seem like a small thing, but it goes a long way when they do it, you know. So
we started this segment talking about the fact that there are plenty of people that are tuned in that don't even know that there is a clerk of scales at a racetrack, and I think now they do. If somebody comes to you, Javier, and asks you about being a clerk of scales, what are you going to tell them that the number one greatest thing is about being the clerk of scales?
Man, there's so many. You know what? Honestly, my dad always said, he said, if you do what you love, it's not work. And he's right. I mean, because I love being at the racetrack. I love the horses. Of course, the horses are number one. I mean, I think we're all in this industry for the love of the horse. I mean, you take the horse out, none of us are there. Jockeys, myself, racing officials. I mean, you guys have nothing to cover. So, I mean, we're there for the horse, and just being around the horses and being at the track is the best. Now, my job personally, I mean, I get to hang out with these, you know, unbelievable athletes. I mean, they are. I mean, pound for pound, the best athletes, I say. You know, and they're great guys. They're great people. I mean, they're family. You know, I mean, we're a family. We really are. I mean, I stopped and think about it. I mean, I probably spend more time in the jocks room with the jocks and valets and the guys I work with than I do my own family. I mean, you know, and so how could they not be considered family when I spend all that time with, you know? So, and we are. We're, you know, all them guys are, they're close. Yeah, I get heated, but trust me, at the end of the day, they have respect for each other. You know, everybody congratulates everybody. Everybody, you know, it's fun to be in a room, you know. And yes, it's serious business at work, but we have fun in there. We have, you know, we got some practical jokers in there, and you know, they play jokes, and it's fun. It's fun, you know. It's that brotherly camaraderie that you know that unites everybody, and it's fun, you know. I mean, who we get paid to go and have fun? They love riding, you know. If you ask 95-96% of them, if they do it for nothing, they say, yep, because they love riding horses, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Who's the biggest prankster in the jocks room?
Ooh, the biggest prankster. Let me think. Right now, Talamo's pretty – Talamo likes to – he likes to play. Corey Lannery. Corey Lannery dishes out pretty good now. He can't take it very good, but he likes to dish it out. And trust me, everybody likes to get Corey because he's so easy. He's so easy to get. So there's a couple of them that are pretty good. I mean.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. Javier Torres, this week's unsung hero, presented by Claiborne. Javier, listen, man, congratulations on this honor here this morning, and keep up the wonderful work. This sport cannot function without your job and without your dedication and efforts and everything you do. So congratulations, and keep it rolling, my friend.
Man, thank you so much. Thank you so much for, I mean, you say unsung hero, and I mean, it sounds good, and you know, I'm just a small part in a big wheel, brother, and you know, we all love the game, and we got our part to do, and keep it rolling.
You're the best. Javier Torres here on Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne. I'll be right back after this word from Claiborne Farm.
DeMarchelier offers breeders a rare opportunity. His pedigree includes 9 Grade 1 winners under the first 3 dams, including classic winner Galileo Crone. A TDN rising star at 2, he went on to capture victories at Keeneland and Belmont, including the Grade 3 Pennine Ridge Stakes. By Sire of Sires Dubawi, whose top sons include the sensational sire Knight of Thunder. The only stallion by Dubawi in Kentucky. DeMarchelier, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Oh, what a fun segment that was. If you missed it, you can go back and check out the podcast later after the show on our website, horseracingradio.net. And again, my thanks to Claiborne and to Javier Torres for making that one possible here this morning. If you know someone you feel should be an unsung hero, you can nominate them by sending me an email, mike@horseracingradio.net. Somebody you feel needs to be recognized as doing great work behind the scenes, send them to me. I will do my best to have them on this unsung hero segment in the weeks and the months ahead. I'm back to take you on a stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker when I return. This is the Equine Forum.
All it takes, is one race, to start a legacy. The Breeders' Cup Challenge Series. Worldwide races. Multiple chances to earn an automatic berth. All expenses and fees paid.
Fort Larned comes into the stretch in front. Mucho Macho Man runs at him with one furlong to run.
To the Breeders' Cup World Championships.
This is unbelievable! Zenyatta! What a performance! One we'll never forget!
Where a share of $31 million in purses and awards wait.
As an owner, I love the Breeders' Cup winning your in series.
You can get a free entry into the Breeders' Cup, and everybody wants to run in a Breeders' Cup race.
Automatic berth takes a lot of pressure off.
The Breeders' Cup Challenge Series. Win, and you're in.
It's probably the best thing that's happened to racing in the last 10 years.
Hey everyone, it's the Baron with this week's North of the Border report presented by Woodbine Entertainment. In this week's report, I'll tell you about updated post times, preview today's Grade 3 Trillium Stakes, and continue down the path to the plate. Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack Thursday through Sunday with the following post times. On Thursday, post time is 1:20 p.m. Eastern. Fridays, it's 4:50 p.m. And Saturday and Sunday, the first race goes at 1:20 p.m. Eastern. In today's Trillium Stakes for Phillies and Mares 4-year-olds and up, dual Hall of Fame trainer Mark Cassie seeks his third win in the Grade 3 event, and he'll have three opportunities to complete his hat trick. Crystal Glacier, a 4-year-old daughter of Curlin, has assembled a record of three wins and a second from nine career starts for Live Oak Plantation. Heavenly Curlin, also a daughter of Curlin, will no doubt appreciate a return to the Woodbine Tapeta. Owned by Gary Barber and John Oxley, the 4-year-old Bay rhymed off three consecutive triumphs at the Toronto Oval in 2020, including a 5 3/4 length romp in the Grade 3 Maple Leaf Stakes on November 7th. And finally, Skygaze, who has contested five of her nine career starts at Woodbine, returns to Canada on a 3-race win streak that began last fall in Ontario. In this week's Path to the Plate segment, we focus on 3-year-old Title Forces for trainer Gal Cox. Following his recent mile and a 16th allowance optional claiming win, the striking Sam Sun Farm homebred now finds himself pointed to the historic Queen's Plate on August 22nd. Listed at 50-1 in the Queen's Plate winter book, the Ontario bred has now stamped himself as a legitimate plate contender. And that's your North of the Border report for this Saturday morning. For more updates and racing information, visit Woodbine.com or follow along on Twitter at WoodbineTV.
Hi, I'm Leah Jarmati, and I love listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Brass Hat's coming on now as they straighten away in the stretch drive. They turn for home. Brass Hat, here comes Perfect Drift on the far outside. Perfect Drift runs by them all at the eighth pole. Perfect Drift, the veteran, opens up quickly by three. Buzzards Bay, Brass Hat for Love of Money up the inside. And a late charge from the bomb. Seek Gold on the far outside. Big long shot, Seek Gold, Perfect Drift. Seek Gold on the outside, and Perfect Drift hits too close to call. A nose apart in the Stephen Foster in 149-1.
A late charge from the bomb. Luke Kreifosch, the late Luke Kreifosch, with the call of that race. It was the 2006 running of the Stephen Foster. Seek Gold and Kevin Burrell coming from far back at odds of 91-1 to upset Perfect Drift and Brass Hat and all the other contenders. Buzzards Bay was actually the favorite in that race. Remember Buzzards Bay? I remember Seek Gold. We were sitting out back by the paddock area doing the broadcast of that race. It was one of the first ever times we had broadcast a race from Churchill Downs in the infancy of HRN, and to see Seek Gold, who was trained then by Ron Moquette, come flying at the end. What a thrilling finish that was, and it's a day I will never forget. The $2 win payout, $185.40 on Seek Gold. Not bad for a $2 win bet. Seek Gold, Calvin Burrell, Ron Moquette, they're all part of racing history, considering that upset in the Stephen Foster. And that leads me into this week's edition of Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. She beat 28 rivals to win the richest race of the year in one of the biggest fields ever assembled for a stakes race in the United States. Her name was Mother Goose, and later today, the New York Racing Association will remember her with the 63rd running of the Mother Goose Stakes at Belmont Park. A brown filly who was described as blocky, not particularly big or athletic, Mother Goose was foaled in 1922. Her owner and breeder was Harry Payne Whitney, a member of America's aristocracy whose father had served as Secretary of the Navy during the first Grover Cleveland administration. Whitney, known for his integrity and described by Damon Runyon as the first American sportsman, had already enjoyed considerable success with homebreds. In 1915, his filly Regret, a daughter of Broomstick, had become the first distaffer ever to win the Kentucky Derby. And now, in 1924, his filly Mother Goose was emerging as one of the top juvenile fillies on the East Coast. Mother Goose broke a track record on debut at Havre de Grace in Maryland in April of her two-year-old season. She would prove that effort was not a fluke when she won the Fashion Stakes later that spring at Belmont Park, followed by a runner-up finish at Belmont in the Astoria on July 4th. As the late summer campaign unfolded, all eyes turned to Belmont in September for the running of the Futurity Stakes. With a purse of $75,000, it was the richest race of the year in North America, and it would pay $65,000 to the winner. A total of 29 juveniles entered the event to be contested at 6 furlongs. Whitney had won the Futurity on 4 prior occasions, but never with a filly, and a homebred filly at that. Mother Goose would be part of a 3-horse entry trained by James Rowe for Whitney that day at odds of 6-1. The filly broke sharply, stayed in the first flight of traffic throughout the sprint, and won by a head over Longshot Stimulus before a crowd of 25,000. Still, there were critics. Mother Goose had carried only 114 pounds, while others had carried as much as 127. She had barely held off a 50-1 outsider in the final strides. The winners of the Hopeful, the Saratoga Special, the Sanford, the Spinaway, and the Adirondack had not even been in the lineup, the result of injuries in some cases and ineligibility in others. Yet history has proved that Mother Goose's win in the 1924 Belmont Futurity over 28 rivals was truly remarkable. In a race which dates to 1888 and is still held annually to this day, she remains one of only 13 fillies ever to win the Belmont Futurity. And her impact on the breed is evidenced by her status as a direct maternal ancestor of leading sire Halo and super sire Northern Dancer. Today, the 63rd running of the Mother Goose Stakes goes to the post at Belmont Park, contested as a Grade II event for a purse of $300,000. Some of the greatest fillies in the sport's history have won the race. Names such as Ruffian, Gopher Juan, Serena Song, and in 2009, in her first start after winning the Preakness, Rachel Alexandra won the Mother Goose. Tom Durkin gives us the call.
A grueling pace for Malibu Prayer and Flashing. They're still head-to-head for the lead. 2 lengths behind them looms the Preakness winner, Rachel Alexandra. There she goes! There she goes in between horses, and with a decisive thrust, it's Rachel Alexandra to the lead, and now they're turning it on. Calvin Burrell cuts his filly loose, and she's pouring it on in a dazzling display here. Nothing left for the other two. Coming down to the final 16th of a mile, her march to greatness continues. Rachel Alexandra wins ease. Again, a huge margin. It was almost 20 lengths again. The time was 1:46 and 1/5 seconds, and that's a new stakes record.
In a race which at the time was still contested at a mile and an eighth, Rachel Alexandra won by 19 and a quarter lengths in stakes record time of 1 minute 46.33 seconds. As for Mother Goose herself, she was nominated to the Preakness, the Kentucky Derby, and the Kentucky Oaks as a 3-year-old in 1925. Yet she never returned to the races after her sensational juvenile campaign. Still, she owns one of the most memorable victories ever recorded by a North American juvenile. The New York Racing Association remembers Mother Goose today, and we join them in saluting her legacy. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Great stuff. And we remember Mother Goose on this day, as Kurt alluded to, the Mother Goose Stakes taking place at Belmont Park. Always a highlight of the summer racing season, at least for me, as somebody who grew up, you know, watching the racing in New York and seeing the Triple Tierra. Remember, that was what, the Acorn, the Mother Goose, and the Coaching Club American Oaks, the Triple Crown for fillies in New York. It was really an unbelievable series. Not like that anymore, unfortunately, but the Mother Goose, still a tremendous race, and wonderful stuff by Kurt Becker. If you want to hear all of Kurt's Stroll Through Racing History segments, they're available via podcast on our website, horseracingradio.net. Just click on the Shows tab at the top of the homepage, and you can go back and listen to all of them at your leisure. I'm back with more. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
Joe Buck and John Smoltz welcoming you back to the City Center Convenience Mart. Well, John, the stage is set for the final transaction.
That's right, Joe. Heather's moment has arrived, and you just hope all that training pays off.
Heather lays down her purchase, but Randy rings it up as slowly as he can.
He is a wily veteran.
It gives Heather's eyes the chance to wander.
Uh-oh.
Yep, she's looking at the cigarettes.
There's nothing good back there. Quit now, and in 5 years, your odds of getting certain cancers drop 50%.
Meanwhile, Randy's stone-faced. He's giving nothing away. He just stands there, wetting his cashier's finger on that sponge.
Heather toes the rubber.
Here we go. Heather's arm is in motion. But instead of pointing at the back wall, she just grabs the gum off the counter.
That's a slick move.
Heather, back, back, back. She is out of there. Even Randy tips his cap to Heather. Stand Up to Cancer and Rally wants you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
To be able to go back to the movies.
Introduce my family to my new girlfriend.
For my husband, who's been a chronic asthmatic his whole life.
So I can visit friends in a different state.
So I can take my granddaughter out to the park again.
So that I can hug my 85-year-old grandma again.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be? Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Hi, this is jockey Brian Hernandez. For me, there's no bigger thrill than crossing the finish line in front, and nobody captures the excitement of our sport like Horse Racing Radio Network. Each week, HRRN brings you exclusive talk shows, podcasts, and in-depth conversations with the biggest names in racing, jockeys, trainers, owners, and more. Plus, HRRN is committed to helping disabled riders through their support of the PDJF. So climb aboard a winner today by visiting horseracingradio.net.
Hello, I'm Junior Alvarado, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch. Happy to have you with me. Getting ready to wrap up hour number two. Huge third hour of the program coming up, though. Plenty more conversation about the Stephen Foster program and so much more. I will tell you about that momentarily, but as I like to do in this segment every week, it's time now to take a look at some notable dates in racing history on this June 26th. And it was 35 years ago that jockey Sandy Hawley won his 5,000th career race aboard Mighty Massa at Canterbury Downs. That came on June 26, 1986. June 26, 1992, jockey David Gall became the eighth rider in history to ride 6,000 winners when he rode Nana's Nice Boy to victory at Fairmount Park. And in 1994, on this very day, jockey Chris McCarron rode career winner number 6,000 when Andestine won the Milady Handicap at Hollywood Park. He was the 11th rider to reach 6,000 and the third youngest behind Bill Shoemaker and Lafitte Pinkai Jr. And one more for you, June 26th, 2000, Hall of Fame trainer Lucien Lorne, conditioner of 1973 Triple Crown winner Secretariat, died at the age of 88. That's going to do it for the first 2 hours of today's show. Plenty more to come. Hour three kicks off with this week's edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy, his unique one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation this week with jockey Jose Ferrer. At 10:25, I'll welcome in two-time Stephen Foster winning trainer Dallas Stewart, looking to complete the hat trick later today. And in the final segment of today's show, we go down the road to the Breeders' Cup with trainer Fausto Gutierrez. He prepares to saddle the ultra-talented Latruska later today in the Florida League. If your station is leaving us at this time, you can continue listening at horseracingradio.net and in the Louisville, Kentucky market on ESPN 680 or on your computer or mobile device. Hour 3 of the Equine Forum is next, right after this 10-second pause for station identification. This is HRN.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It is California Chrome in front, and from the back of the pack on the outside, commanding curve is taken second, but California Chrome shines bright in the Kentucky Derby!
Into the final furlong, there will be a fourth jewel in the crown. He's an everlasting credit to the sport. American Pharoah has belted a grand slam in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Gunrunner needs another 16th. It's Gunrunner in front. He'll go out a winner. He's the horse of the year, and he's Gunrunner with an unforgettable performance in the Pegasus World Cup.
And Vino Rosso is right to him on the outside. Vino Rosso has taken the lead, and he powers away under Iran Ortiz Jr. Vino Rosso, like father, like son, the son of Carlin, romps in the Longines Breeders' Cup Classic.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Rolling on. Busy morning here on the Equine Forum. Happy to have you in the saddle with me once again. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And it has been a busy show. If you missed any portion of the show, my interviews with Jimmy Bell or Darren Rogers in the first hour, or Dallas Baker from BetMakers with an exciting announcement in the second hour of the program, or that unforgettable Unsung Heroes segment with Javier Torres, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, a podcast of this show available for you to listen to at your leisure. You can do that each and every week. All of our talk shows, by the way, that we produce throughout the week are up there for you to listen to anytime you would like. And you can go back and listen to historic ones, too, if you want to go back to the beginning of Trainer Talk, our very first one from, what, 8, 9, 10 years ago. It's out there for you. Head back and listen to them whenever you get some time. If you're driving around, pot them up, Bluetooth them in your car. I don't think you'll be disappointed. Follow us on social media, too, at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook and on Instagram. Here's the poll question today. If your goal is to win a Breeders' Cup race in November, which horse would you rather have right now, Latruska or Maxfield? Now, both of those horses are heavy 4-5 morning line favorites for the respective races later today. Latruska in the Florida Lee, Maxfield in the Stephen Foster. And it's an interesting question. I'm curious to see how this all plays out in the very end, because, you know, Latruska could very well now be the leader in that distaff division. She already has the win in your end by winning the Ogden Phipps in her most recent start. Monomoy Girl would be a handful for Latruska, at least you would think, although Latruska already beat her once this year. But I think in a rematch, you give the edge to the ultra-tough, ultra-talented Monomoy Girl. But Latruska just continues to get better and better and better. So it's interesting. If Monomoy Girl doesn't come back, Latruska very well could be the horse to beat. And if you're trying to win a Breeders' Cup race, that's always a good thing. Maxfield, on the other hand, as good as he is, now 6-for-7 lifetime, his only loss coming in March in the Grade 1 Santa Anita Handicap, will have to contend with a couple of very talented stablemates of his. Not so much stablemates because they're not with the same trainer, but the same owners anyway. Godolphin, Mystic Guide, winner of the Dubai World Cup, who is probably at the top of this older horse division right now. I think you'd have to say that's legit. And Essential Quality, who won the Belmont Stakes. And by the way, don't forget about Hot Rod Charlie, who will also be pointed, I would assume, toward a run in the Breeders' Cup Classic. So Maxfield has, in my opinion, a tougher path to being a Breeders' Cup winner. And, of course, that's all based on Monomoy Girl not making it back for the Breeders' Cup in November. She is currently on the sidelines. But we know she can bounce back. She's done it before. And she can bounce back very quickly. Interesting question. At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. If you don't do social media, you can email me your answers to the poll question, mike@horseracingradio.net. All right, coming up here, Hour 3. It begins with In the Room with Sean Clancy. He sits down with Monmouth Park's leading rider, Jose Ferrer. Then I welcome in trainer Dallas Stewart to talk about going for a third Stephen Foster leader later today and the road to the Breeders' Cup with Fausto Gutierrez joining me to talk about Letruska. That is all ahead. But it begins with this week's edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy, presented by ThisIsHorseRacing.com.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jockey Jose Ferrer. In a career that began in 1982, Jose Ferrer is still going strong, winning 52 races so far in 2021, standing atop the Monmouth Park standings and climbing ever closer to 5,000 career wins. At 57, Jose Ferrer is living proof that age is just a number. Welcome to the show, Jose.
Hey, how you doing, guys? Guys, that's pretty awesome to listen, man. I mean, feel like a movie star there, man. Awesome.
Oh, we're the movies here. This is
man, awesome. Great. No, nice to meet your show, guys. Thank you so much for getting me your show. Appreciate it.
It's great to have you on. Take us back to the beginning, growing up in Puerto Rico. How did you become a jockey? Was that something you always wanted to do, or your family was involved, or how did that all come about?
Yeah, my father was about, my uncle was Carlos Lopez Sr., my cousin Choke Sixty Lopez. I got a couple of more, Eric Lopez, David Lopez. We like five or six riders in a family. And that's pretty much, again, through my uncle. He's going to open the door for all of us.
Wow, yeah, we know those names. I mean, those are iconic names in our sport. So following them along, when you were a kid, just growing up wanting to be a jockey, is that how, and then you just like following them?
Yeah, I believe you. I want to be a baseball player, believe it or not.
Didn't we all?
Yeah, man, I was really good at it. But not. I don't have the heights at all to be, baseball player. So I become a rider, follow my uncle's steps. You know what I mean? But that was awesome because I always wanted, a baseball player, jockey, 4'11", so 5 feet tall, so I might as well stick it on. But please, I belong. Because my height and my weight. So we got good. King of play.
For sure. Did you ride in Puerto Rico or did you come to America and first start riding here?
No, I came here in New Jersey most part in 1982. I was in Puerto Rico for a little bit, not too much. So I came here. I talked to my uncle. He got me here. Got me here in Jersey to work on the backside. And that's how I got, my first riding here in 1982 in Mama Park.
And did it come easy? Was it tough getting started, or was that, did you have doors kind of open for you, or what was that like?
It was tough. It's kind of the sport. You got to do your time first. You have to, pretty much your foundation, like my uncle was telling me, lay the ground. From there, you work really hard at it, and hopefully, people open the door for you. But, you got to work hard on anything you want to do, you got to work hard at it.
Yeah, of course, and you've worked hard to get where you are. And take us through those years. I mean, you've been very consistent, staying mostly New Jersey and Tampa Bay Downs, I guess, for the most part.
No, I was all over the place, but even I went to Jersey. I was in Jersey. I went to Philadelphia. Philadelphia used to be when I rolled start beginning by 80, it used to be Keystone Racetrack.
Yeah,
and then
sure.
Changed the name to Philadelphia Park, and now it's Park Racing. But I rolled a little bit, a couple of years there. I rolled 5 years in Chicago, East Coast. I went to Calder. It used to be Calder. down in Miami. I was there for another 5 years. Some all the East Coast. I rode all the East Coast, Midwest. When I was in Chicago, I rode a lot of tracks over there in the Midwest. Oakland, Minnesota, Canterbury.
Wow.
You know me? Yeah. All the East Coast tracks. You know, I rode a little bit, you know, I used to go to a little bit, you know, not, you know, kind of went like once a week. I was doing the, I was riding the, and in the Virgin Islands too. So I'm been riding all over the place. Yeah, around Italy, England. Yeah.
You followed the circus, right? That's what I call
yeah,
it.
Yeah, man. I mean, he followed the circus real big. Tell me about it, man. Absolutely. But it's great experience. You got to meet, you know, different culture, different states, different people. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Experience all kinds of different full environment. It's a, you know, I can't complain. It's a great experience, you know, to meet just three different states and, you know, be a part of these, you know, people, cultures and stuff. It's really great.
And you're still going strong at 57. Is that something you always expected, or do you just kind of take it day by day? What's that like, that journey?
Hey, I never put a time or a year or moment, you know, I'm going to be riding or retired. No, I just, you know, go out every day and enjoy myself. You know, I got two beautiful children. I got a beautiful wife, young wife. She's beautiful. I got give me two beautiful kids. I got a five-year-old, Joey. I got a seven-year-old, Derek. That's pretty much, the, you know, feel me. You know me. That's, I always call my, you know, energy bunnies, my kids and my wife.
For sure.
They give me these, you know, because I never have these, I would say, excitement. And now I see my two kids. You know me, first my wife when she was getting really all fired up. See me right, and my two children now see me out there screaming hollow. He's a, you know, gave me just this two individual, you know me. I'm just, you know, God, middle stairs, give me strength and all the opportunity. And my boys fill me with fluids. That's what keep me going. And I love them. Like I don't say, I don't want to retire. I just want to keep going. You know, day by day, enjoy myself. I'm keep working hard because I work out hard. I work out like twice a day, every single day. You know, I got my little gym in my house over there, like Tampa, I got my own gym. Here I work out in Jackson. I work out in here at Monmouth University. My father-in-law is equipment manager there. So I got access to the gym here. So I was trying to work out every day, no matter what I am. I was trying to do something, you know, weights, run, ride the bikes, lift. I like to lift a lot. I do a lot of, you know, dumbbells and weights. That's what I like, love to do.
That's how you keep up with these young kids, I guess, right?
Well, I try to keep up, you know, man, but these days, man, you know, like, you know, man, I try to, like, put a sample to kids, hey, you got to work hard, you know, work out a lot. But, you know, a lot of the young kids, they want to, you know, Instagrams, in, you know, Facebook, all that, you know, like, I don't know how to do that, you know, I don't have no time for that. So I told the guys, you know, I just want to work out. And I showed the, you know, the young fellas, you work out hard, your body, later on, when you're my age, you'll be able to ride, you'll be able to compete. So that's what I'm doing. I have to work double hard. Because I had to compete with, you know, kids younger than, you know, 25 years than myself. That's why I got to do harder, extra harder work. But, you know, I love to do it. I love to compete. You know what I mean? Look at Tom Brady. You know, Tom.
Of course.
20 years old. You know what I mean? He's, you know, quarterback.
Yeah.
Greatest quarterback ever. He's 42 years old. Competed, guys, you know, 20 years younger than him. So I'm you know, focused on that. You know what I mean? So that's my goal. You know, keep working hard. I keep competing. I enjoy it. Pretty much, you have to enjoy yourself. I love what I'm doing. I love what I'm doing. I enjoy myself. I enjoy my family around me. So, pretty much, that's my foundation.
Wow, that's brilliant. Now you can hear it in your voice, that enthusiasm. You're off to a great start at Monmouth. And this year at Monmouth, they've instituted basically whipless racing where you can only use it as a safety device. How has that affected your riding? Has that changed how you ride? Or has that actually been a benefit to the way you ride?
I think benefit to me. Because I came old school, I come back in the 80s when, you know, when I started riding, you know, the people around me, all the, you know, riders, they used to ride, you know, see barely hit the whip, you know, they pretty much, that was a baseball position on him ride, you know what I mean, and help the horse through the reins, you know, like Pat Day, and or, you know, talk about Pat Day and Yoko Dero, all the greatest riders, you ever see them, they never hit. You see Pat Day down the lane, man, then come on, Pat, hit your horse every day, just hand ride. I said, man, this guy going to hit the horse? You know what I mean? Going 60 on the mile, he's still hand riding, bam, bam, maybe smack, you know. You know what I mean? Like, it was still supposed to be I wasn't like a tool for, you know, last minute. You know what I mean? Horses, you know what I mean? They want to be waking up a little harder than other horses. So that was used to, you know, we used to, you know, the riders back in the days, when I used to see that, they used to use that the last, you know, the last ashram, I would say.
Sure.
You know, give enough, not enough. Or, you know, let's go back to the stake, bam, hit a couple of times, and the horse respond, and they give you all they can get. So basically, I was brought up that way. Now, when there been this rule over here, it won't hurt me much because I like that. And it was a you know, whipping rider, you know, I never like.
Sure. Yeah.
But it, you know, matter of fact, back in the '80s, I remember I used to be a fan all the time. You don't hit enough, you got to hit, you got to hit. So, you know me, I never believe him beat up a horse up. I never believe him overdoing a step because, you know, he's like, I would, you know, have a thought in the back of my head that if you hit a couple, two, three times, the horse won't respond. If you hit it 20 times, they don't want to give you no more, no matter how many, you know, hit it, you know. But, you know, some horses are different, but, you know, 85% of the horses, if they don't respond like two, three times, full bang, they don't want to give you no more. What are you going to keep beating the animal for? You know, that's a, you know. So I came through that school. Now when they stop the whipping, I'm pretty much what I'm doing is keep my stick down. I'm thinking, hey, I'm back in my 80s, you know, but that's what I'm doing, focusing just handwriting, my, you know, my style. Because I always, you know, love to do that.
Yeah, for sure. Have you seen any difference in the racing? Are horses staying straighter, or is it? Do you feel like it's any safer? What's it been like? I mean, has it made any difference?
I'll be honest. I feel a little more safety out there, believe it or not, because when you hit the horse, you tend to lose your reins a little bit, and when the horse react to a stick, they should log in, log out. You don't see that too much now, you know, because the horse react, you know what I mean, about the whipping when they hit something. It's like somebody punch you in your arm or something. Bang, you know, you move that way when the impact coming from. So I don't see, I see less moving around, you know, horses ducking real hard outside, yeah. Inside, when react from the whip. You know, I feel, you know, pretty good about that. You know what I mean? The only thing you don't have is that. A spawn like last minute, you know, mm-hmm. Say like I try to explain people like you know, when you're in the basketball game, you got 30 seconds left. You coach your huddle always say, guys, 30 seconds, I went all out. You know, last quarter in the NFL, you go, guys, I want you all out. You know, you still have a boxing match last round. The coach came to you. I said, listen, smack your face around a little bit. Yeah, I want everything you get out there. That's why I'm thinking that's why we're not going to have, not every horse, but, you know, some horses, you know, they can react with the whip. Because I always believe, you know, the whip is like a tool to communication with a horse. People, mm-hmm. You know, always got the whole thing of whip. And wrong. Oh, you beat the horse. No, man. You beat the horse up with a whip. No, man, it's to communicate. You send them. Because this horse is not like a horse. I'm sorry, horse is not like a dog. You say sit. That's it. Let's go. I'm still, you know,
right,
you know,
sure.
It's an animal, 1,500 pounds, running 35 miles an hour, you know, while out there. So we use the whip is to communicate with animals. Hey, it's time to go. And then you have the reins to hold, go back. And then you have the stick to, you know, communicate. It's like a signal. Bang, you hit, bang. All right, react. So horse will react. So horse is dumb. So that's what probably going to miss. And still, if you fight horses, somebody's going to win. Somebody gonna
right.
lose.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's the bottom line. I wish you ever give us like a time by the six sticks, like in Delaware six times you could punch your horse.
Right.
You know what I mean? It should just do something like that. You know, it went for, you know, last year you go 15, 20 times to zero. Completely went out. So, you know, they should like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
Some it's, kind of
yeah.
between. You know what I mean?
Right.
They were like,
yeah.
Okay, you can push me 20 times. Now you can't push me. Or you can play
exactly.
Hockey. You know, like hockey players. You hit the hockey. You smack each other. Bam, bam. Let's play hockey. Nobody touch each other. Okay, guys. Even if all the puck, nobody, no contact. Oh, let's play football. No contact. Let's play flat football. You know what I'm saying? That's
right.
Extremely too much.
Right.
Yeah, that
yeah.
was my personal opinion.
No, I would agree with that. It was a bit of an extreme decision going from open policy to nothing. And probably there was a happy medium in between. But it has been interesting to watch the races. I would agree. Yeah. I think the horses do seem like they're running a little bit straighter. You don't see them weaving around as much as maybe some tracks. I think that's been an interesting development.
If you think about it, we only have them quiet twice, one clean foul, and that was it. But you don't see that bump come on the gate. You know, see that bump in the turns, because right at the hold the reins, because they can do nothing with, so people make better decisions. I think my personal, they're not aggressive, because when you bring the stick to the field, you get more aggressive, more
sure.
Bam, you hit reins a little loose, because no matter what you how strong you already you are, when you put your stick up and you approach your horse to to start to go. The rein's going to get loose a little, no matter how strong you are, how many, talent you are, your rein's going to get a little loose, because now you hold the reins in one hand, then the two hands. So things are a little different. So when you hit, one rein in your hands, probably untangle a little bit, so now the horse react, and some horses are going to go like it, go in, get out. So you don't see that. I don't see it. You probably see that a lot. We don't have these ship lengths a lot.
Right. Been interesting. I would agree with that. It's been interesting to watch.
Yeah.
Well, Jose, when you look back at your career, almost 5,000 wins, 4,572 races, which is an unbelievable number. You're 45th all time, one behind the great Don Brumfield. When you look back at your career, how much do you account it to luck, and how much of it is hard work?
A little bit both. I think between both, you always got to look at Pat Day. I remember Pat Day used to have it's better be lucky than good. It's between. You have to get luck, but you have to work hard too. And you have to foundation to get some kind of goals in life. I want to be the best. I want to win a bunch of races. But you gotta go hard. You have to be lucky too. But for this, it's better be lucky than good. So you have to be, luck and work hard. Both.
Yeah, a little bit of both, I guess, right?
A little bit of both. A little bit of both, man. A little bit of both. And have faith. I always believe in that. A few years. My faith is so strong. We got. Help me out. Help me out. Because you can't do nothing. We got. I always believe that. But it's great. It's great to be. I'm part of this racing. I'm doing it at 57. He's awesome.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's Jose Ferrer, still going strong at 57. Jose, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks so much, buddy.
Always great when Sean gets a chance to sit down one-on-one with a fellow jockey. That brethren connection is so cool, because Sean has played the game and he understands the intricacies and the things that go into riding races, things that go on behind the scenes that most of us don't even know. And my thanks to Jose Ferrer and to Sean for providing us with that In the Room segment. Each week, a portion of the proceeds from In the Room are given back to the PDJF, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. If you would like to help support In the Room and the PDJF, simply send me an email, mike@horseracingradio.net, and we can get you taken care of there and support a great cause. And, boy, what a fun segment that was. By the way, all of those segments, if you missed any of them, some great visits. Ramon Dominguez comes to mind. That was one of my favorite ones. Florent Giroux is there. You can go back and listen, horseracingradio.net. They're all podcasts for you on our website to listen to whenever you get some time. When I come back, I'll turn our attention back to the Stephen Foster. I'll talk to the two-time Stephen Foster winner, Dallas Stewart, as he goes in search of the hat trick later today. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Championship racing is now at the legendary Pimlico Racecourse. The Pimlico meet offers live racing Friday through Sunday with a post time of 12:40 p.m. Wager on Pimlico's Rainbow Pick 6. The carryover has crushed the Maryland state record and has passed the $1 million mark. Don't miss your chance to win big. Rainbow 6 is offered Friday through Sunday at Pimlico. Limited track admissions, or catch the action via live stream at pimlico.com.
Adina Springs bred and raced the best son of Hall of Famer Ghost Sapper. champion, multiple Grade 1 winner, and fellow Hall of Famer Shaman Ghost, who became the first horse in 3 decades to reel off this historic Grade 1 double.
And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Shaman Ghost has beaten Midnight Storm.
Seeing is believing with Shaman Ghost. Learn more at AdinaStallions.com.
The Spring Summer Meet is live now at Gulfstream Park. Live racing Thursday through Sunday through September 26th. Look forward to the Summit of Speed on Saturday, July 3rd, and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series, which begins July 31st. Stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone using First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For the stakes schedule, tips and analysis, and seat reservations, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site tickets are limited, so book your seats now.
A 5-time graded stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrowgate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first 2 seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
I'm Manny Franco, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Einstein still trying to get it out, and he's running out of real estate. Macho again, he's out in front, down the outside, Arson Squad. Einstein got out late, it's too late today. Macho again wins. Macho again has won the Stephen Foster.
They're off the turn. They're into the stretch. Tom's Detat and Quip head and head with 3/16 to go. Seeking the Soul's bearing down. Gift Box is fourth. And from far, far back, Yoshida's rallying to be fifth. Down to the final 16th. Seeking the Soul bearing down on Quip. Quip has to fight back. Seeking the Soul with all the momentum. Seeking the Soul scores in the Foster.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on HRRN. That is a pair of Stephen Foster victories for trainer Dallas Stewart. He looks for number 3 later today with Chess Chief, who is one of the main players against Maxfield in that mile and an eighth test. We'll see if he can pull it off. He is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We'll see what he thinks. Dallas, welcome, my friend.
Hey, Mike. How's it going, buddy?
It's good, pal. How are you?
Excellent.
What do you think? Number 3 in the cards with Chess Chief or what?
I hope so. He's a proven warrior. So we're hoping that the mile and an eighth will be a little better for him than it was a mile and a 16th in the Alashiva.
Yeah, he's been beaten a couple of times this year by Maxfield. He'll have to turn the tables on that rival and several others. But, you know, it's not like he's been embarrassed. He's finished 3rd behind him both times, and back in the mineshaft in the fairgrounds, he was only beaten 3 3/4 lengths. So is the distance enough to make up that ground on a horse like Maxfield?
Hopefully, you know, and hopefully Johnny V will shake him up a little bit. So we're going to try. He's Maxfield's a very good horse, so we'll see.
When you come into a race like this, Dallas, and you have pulled off a lot of upsets, you've saddled a lot of horses that have run big when it didn't seem like they were going to. Chess Chief certainly looks like a contender in here, but when you approach a race like this where there's a heavy favorite, what's your mindset going into the race?
Well, you hope that you've made a step forward. Like we said, we hope that the distance is a little more beneficial for him. You know, and you know, maybe Maxfield will be off a step. You know, you just don't know. Hopefully you match up good some way, somehow. But it comes down to a horse race. Maybe we'll have a better trip than him. Maybe, you know, a few things. Maybe we're going to get better and just, you know, flat out beat him. So it could go all kind of ways. That's why we run him. And, I mean, it's a big purse. It's $600,000. It's a Stephen Foster. So it's sure worth a try.
Yeah, winning, you're in for the Breeders' Cup Classic. He's going to break right from the rail, but he has a guy on his back that knows that racetrack and certainly knows how to work out a good trip from the rail. Tell me more about going with Johnny V in here.
Well, we're glad to have him, and it just worked out like that. Saez has been riding, but he's at the Ohio Derby, and Johnny was available, and we jumped right on him. Glad to have him. Hope we match up good for him.
what things are you seeing from Chess Chief since the Ali Sheba that makes you think he's sitting on a big effort?
You know, he's just a strong, consistent horse, trains hard, eats good, looks good all the time. So he's just a constant racehorse.
Yeah, he is all racehorse, and he's in the hands of the very capable Dallas Stewart, who is, just continues to click along. Dallas, I don't know what the secret is, man, but year in and year out, you send them out, and they just run.
Well, we show up and train them hard. We got a great staff. I have some guys that's been with me a long time, 20 years, 30 years, 17 years. You know, a lot of the same people that stay there and grind it out, you know. It's a big, big help.
Chess Chief is not the only horse you're going to have on the Saturday program. You also send out Lansdowne in the Bashford Manor. Tell me a little bit more about Lansdowne.
Well, we weren't that surprised when he won. He's a very fast horse. He worked really well, ran good, and you can look at his work tab. He's been working well since his maiden effort, and he should show up and run hard. It's a good two-year-old race, but he's a very professional-type colt, so that's going to help him out also.
How long did it take you to know that he could run a little bit when you first got him into your barn?
He was just solid in his breezes. Like, he came in prepared very well with the group, and he continued to beat the other colts in the morning. And he showed up nice with strong works, fast works, was extremely fast leaving the gates. So that's what it takes to win two-year-old races.
We're kind of working backwards here, but you have Star in My Dreams in the seventh race, which is the War Chant Stakes. Jose Ortiz has the call. Tell me about Star in My Dreams.
Well, we were just hoping that it would rain and would come off. If it doesn't look like it's going to rain, and we'll take that horse to the Indiana Derby, so he probably won't run. We were just hoping for rain.
Yeah, gotcha. I don't think we're going to get that. And I should say Starin in My Dreams. There are two INs in the middle there, Starin in My Dreams, pointing to the Indiana Derby. Dallas, when you think about your two wins in the Stephen Foster, and we just heard those clips coming out of the commercial break, but Macho again, Seeking the Soul. I mean, these were two horses that proved to be really, really good. Did you know all along when you first got them into your barn that you were sitting on some good horses with those two?
Well, actually, Macho again was a little bit tricky. He was a kind of a lazy horse, wouldn't work that fast. But he started running, you know, right from the get-go. First time we ran him, I think he ran second maybe. He was just very, you know, right spot on. Not in the morning, but more so in the afternoon. So, he almost beat Rachel Alexander. Don't forget about that great race. He almost took down the rafters at Saratoga that day. One more jumping, it might have happened. But anyhow,
that's right.
He was a real nice horse. Yeah, he was almost out in the, I think it was the Woodward. It was the Woodward. And so he was a good horse. And Seeking a Soul, I mean, he was second in the Pegasus. He came in, though. He was really fast. He was in the two-year-old training sale and didn't really get no bids on him, so Chuck kept him. And the guys liked him and sent him into train. And, I think he ran second his first time. He didn't start till, I don't know if he started at 3 or he started at late 2. But, he clicked it off right off the bat, too, also.
Isn't that incredible? How many times do we hear that story, Dallas, that a horse goes to the auction ring, doesn't attract a lot of attention, and all of a sudden they're a top-class racehorse? I mean, that's an incredible story.
Well, he was one that he was a heavy breather. You know, and the people at the two-year-old training sales, they don't like no any kind of breathing sound. And it, me also, they're scary, you know. It wasn't really a choking sound, but he made like a he was just really just kind of, he was kind of a really aggressive horse, and I guess he was just really into his breathing. Remind me of Steinlin. I used to gallop Steinlin when I was working for Wayne back in the day, and he was like that. And he never had a breathing problem, but he would make some kind of noise a little bit when he was galloping. But back to Seeking the Soul, he was at the sale, and that's probably what scared everybody off. So they did all kind of diagnostic scopes and everything on him, but it all proved negative. But, you know, the people just didn't want him. So he kept him, and it turned out great for Chuck. He's a stallion in Florida.
Yeah, fantastic. And, you know, Steinlin, another one. You mentioned that name. There's another horse that, you know, if you can look past the sounds that he's making when he breezes and gallops, then, you know, you get a pretty good racehorse.
Yeah, and listen, we as trainers, we don't want to hear him make any kind of noise when they breathe. That was just two good stories. There's 100 bad ones on other horses, believe me.
Do you ever go back and watch some of your big wins and, you know, kind of pull them up on the internet and take a look at them?
Sure. Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
What's your favorite one?
I mean, that race with Macho, even though he got beat, that was pretty exciting. You know, I still kind of pull my shoulders back a little bit thinking, man, he almost might get there. You know, it was pretty fun because she was a champion. And, you know, Limits Forever was just incredible to watch where she came from, pass every horse and stay on and get that beat, get that win, beat them all. And, you know, the Breeders' Cup win with her daughter, you know, that was pretty terrific. You know, there's been a few, you know, it's just enjoyable to kick back and watch from time to time when you think about the horse, you know.
Talking with trainer Dallas Stewart here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Dallas, give me an update on one of your other greatest stakes winners from earlier this year. That's Will's Secret. What's going on with Will's Secret?
Well, she's done pretty well since she was third in the Kentucky Oaks, and we're looking at the Indiana Oaks for her. That's on July 7th.
All right. Plenty of action going on with the Dallas Stewart camp.
Yeah.
Man, I like to see it, brother. I'm glad that things are going well, and good luck with Chess Chief and with all the contenders later today, and let's see if we can't punch our ticket to the Breeders' Cup, huh?
Thanks for everything, Mike. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, buddy. Dallas Stewart here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And, yeah, if I didn't let him go so quickly, I'd like to hit him up with a Go Steelers right before I let him go. Big New Orleans Saints fan is Dallas, and rightfully so, from New Orleans, and he should be. And he is really, you know, you talk about the consistency of a guy like Dallas Stewart. And sometimes he flies under the radar. I don't think that, you know, he's not in the spotlight necessarily day in and day out, like a lot of trainers. But you look at his consistency every single year with, you know, his number of wins and the number of stakes races that he wins. It's consistent year in and year out. And I think that that's a feather in his cap that he can, you know, continue on being so consistent like that. It's fantastic. And my thanks to Dallas. And don't be surprised. He has that tendency to pull a rabbit out of a hat, just like his mentor, Dwayne Lucas. Don't be surprised if Chess Chief runs a big race under Johnny V coming up later today. All right, well, time now for your KTA Spotlight segment, this monthly segment brought to you by the KTA KTOB. It is technically your Kentucky Bred Spotlight because we're going to focus on some of the news surrounding Kentucky Breds. Don't leave money on the table. Race in Kentucky with lucrative opportunities that include two new $1 million stakes races this year at Kentucky Downs, the Turf Sprint, which is a Grade 3, and Windstar Mint Million, which is also a Grade 3. Join the $1 million Calumet Turf Cup at that meet. That's a Grade 2, and a total of 16 stakes worth a track record $10 million with $4.85 million in purse supplements for registered Kentucky bred horses. It's pretty exciting. Of course, in Kentucky, we are always rewarding excellence. Over $170 million has been distributed to Kentucky breeders since 2006, and with purse money soaring, exceeding $118 million in 2020, and thanks to the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund, the fullest fields in the country and quality racing year-round, there is clearly no better time to race in the bluegrass. Why race and breed anywhere else? That's the question. Breed them. Raise them. Race them. We all win. For more information, visit KentuckyBreds.com or KBIF.KHRC@KY.gov. Another way that you can get more information. When I come back, I'll take you down the road to the Breeders' Cup as I visit with trainer Fausto Gutierrez, talking about his talented distaffer, Letruska. This is the Equine Forum on HRN.
Spring Meet is back at Churchill Downs with live racing now through June 26th. And new this year, Stephen Foster Day has moved to a daytime card with seven total stakes races that include the Breeders' Cup Winning Your In Florida Lee for the Distaff Division and the Stephen Foster for the Classic Division. Churchill also has Twilight Racing starting at 5 p.m. each Thursday throughout the remainder of the meet. Add in the strong purses, and you're not going to want to miss the spring meet at Churchill Downs. Get your tickets today at churchilldowns.com.
Pit Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
Hey, horse players, it's Paul Allen, radio voice of the Purple and track announcer at Canterbury Park. In 2020, Canterbury introduced a 10% takeout pick five, the best value in racing. This year, in addition to the nation's lowest takeout pick five, Canterbury is introducing an all-new $1 10% takeout pick six. No jackpots, no gimmicks. Watch and wager on Canterbury Park all summer. Racing runs Tuesday through Thursday at 5 p.m. Central and Sundays at 1. CanterburyPark.com. Come play.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
On the far outside, Sail By is coming on late. Sail By sails by them all to win her debut impressively from off the pace. Sail By does it.
Sail By, the daughter of Darley Stallion Astern, did just that, sailing by the competition in an impressive last-to-first debut win at Belmont on June 18th. A winning effort that makes her your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Astern, Medaglia d'Oro's fastest son at stud. Sail By joined impressive first out maiden winner Mainstay, a TDN rising star, as recent debut winners from Astern's first Northern Hemisphere crop. Second crop yearlings sell next month at Basic Tipton. Learn more about Astern and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
This is Florent Giroux, and you are listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It is Latruska in front as they turn into the stretch. She ran three quarters in 1:10-1. Jose Ortiz hasn't asked her yet. Now he shakes up the reins as they pass the 3/16 pole. It is Latruska leading here by four. Then She Dares the Devil and Bonnie South. It's Latruska with the lead. Bonnie South moving up on the outside into second. And Latruska has it won. A tour de force here for Latruska. She won by three. A mile and a 16th in 1 minute, 41 1/5 seconds.
John Embriel with the call. That was the Ogden Phipps at Belmont back on June 5th. And it was a tour de force for your winner. Latruska, she really put on a show that day. She handled Bonnie South and She Dares the Devil. She handled all of them. Matter of fact, getting some revenge on She Dares the Devil, who handed Latruska her only loss here in 2021, that coming in the Azari, three starts back at Oaklawn Park. Fausto Gutierrez is the trainer of Latruska, and he joins me to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
It's time to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
Well, Latruska already qualified for a spot in the starting gate of the Breeders' Cup Distaff by virtue of that big win at Belmont Park. And Fausto is with me now. Fausto, appreciate the visit, my friend. Always great to talk to you.
Yes, hello. How are you? The pressure is for me to speak with you.
Oh, man, what a race she ran last time out at Belmont, huh?
Yes, really, she ran nice, fast, and I think she's improved each race. And now, when we spoke before about she's a horse with potential to show very interesting things, but I think now she's a reality, you know? She's a horse to run different tracks, different jockeys, conditions, and all the time she improve and give a nice show and a big effort.
Nothing seems to bother this mare. You point out the fact that she runs on any surface. She has now won, let's see, as I'm looking at it, at Gulfstream, at Saratoga, at Sam Houston, at Oaklawn, and she has now won at Belmont too.
Yes, this is correct. She's a race horse. She's a horse with all the time, I tell, with a very special character. But finally, she's a horse to like to run. It's not important where, and till this moment, everything go pretty nice, and I hope to continue like this to try to have a great year for she. And now she's in the top, one of the tops of the division, so now Ja is not more a Cinderella. Ja, she's a real horse to now. Is the serious horse on the races, no?
I think she is the leader in this division, Fausto. You had Monomoy Girl to contend with, but she is now on the sidelines. If she doesn't come back for the Breeders' Cup, then I think Latruska, all things being equal, she has to be the horse to beat in that race. But I know there's a lot of ground to cover before we get to the Breeders' Cup in November. How beneficial is it for you to already have that win in your in Breeders' Cup Challenge race under your belt?
Okay, it's important because I understand to these races to you win, you are in, are the most tough in the division at the year, and have a benefit too when you win these races. And more important than this is how she's improved, how Letruska is improved each race. You can see the times, the speed numbers, and more than this, she run near to a horses to have a big quality, no? I think too, in that moment is when the times are important, but it's not the most important. The question is how breed the horses to run near to you. So when I saw her at Oakland in front to the Monomoy and the Swiss Skydiver and how she fight and how she win that race, I understand too. The real potential or the real special horse to she is.
Yeah, she's very, very special. Fausto Gutierrez going down the road to the Breeders' Cup with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Latruska, 4-5 on the morning line in today's Florida Lee. That also a win in your end for the Breeders' Cup distaff, but as you just heard Fausto talk about, he doesn't need the win in your end. He already has it, but he would love to win the Florida Lee. She comes back on somewhat short rest, Fausto, having won that race at Belmont back in the beginning of June. Now here she is on the 26th. She hasn't worked at all, no published work since that effort at Belmont. Tell me about the strategy bringing her back in this spot.
Okay, yes. This is a race which is not original, not exactly programmed, but it's not one of the... How I explain you, after she run at Belmont, and in the good form to she is right now, I nominate 2 weeks ago for this race. Even I was at Arlington because I run a horse there, and I remember, hey, today is the nomination for the Fleur de Lis, and I called to nominate with the idea to check the competence and how looks the race and to be present in this division. When I saw the nominates and I saw how she come back to the Belmont and how she is trained and how she's asked the race. So this is complicated even to train she in the mornings. I decide to it's a moment to take a risk. I think to 21 days is a good time with the horses in form. Maybe after this one we give a layoff of 60 days or depend. But when, in my opinion, when the horse ask you to run, it's time to run. And this is the situation now with she. Finally, it's a group two in one of the best tracks in the world. So why not? It's a group for six horses. She's the morning line favorite. She asked to run. I understand to finally are races and whatever is possible to happen, but I'm 100% sure to she's ready and recovered after the Belmont for this race.
What do you think the key has been here in 2021? Because she just continues to get better and better and better. What's the secret for her?
I think to the secret is to she's more a horse to is in the real moment that when she have 5 years. some of the competence are have four. You know, sometimes this transition to the three, to the four is a little bit complicated for someone. So I think to she's big. She feel all to happen. She's a horse with a better mind. We spoke about the when we remove the blinkers, this is another positive point because now she have more chance to relax in the races. She have a real explosive natural speed, but now she have the chance to show around the other horses. Before with the blinkers, she run absolutely in front versus the time. She because normally she never see the other horses to are back to she. Now she have more control for the races, and she like to fight, and this is one of the important points. Combined with the real class physical qualities to she have.
Yeah, Latruska, very, very tough. She has that speed. She has the tenacity. You hear Fausto mention the fact that she loves a fight, and she will not shy away from the competition if it gets tight down the stretch. There's no doubt about that. Looking forward to seeing her strut her stuff later today in the Fleur de Lis. Fausto, when you and I talked on my Trainer Talk program, we spent some time talking about Latruska's owner, Herman Larrea, who is, he races under St. George Stable, but he has been a longtime partner of yours, and this has to be special to do this with him.
Yes, he's an owner to like a lot of the horses, and he's absolutely happy with this filly, with this mare today. He's a person to like the business for the races and to buy mares and have a lot, breed a lot of horses in Mexico, someone here at Kentucky. And when you have this kind of inversion, someday you have the chance to have these horses.
You know, I said earlier that he pulled off a feat that not many owners can say that they have done. He won a Triple Crown in Mexico.
Yes, okay, he's the bigger owner and breeder at Mexico. We spoke before about this. He's in Mexico, it's an activity that is very small in comparison with the United States. In Mexico, born today 150 horses, so it's 1% of the horses to born here, and plus the quality for the horses. So it's interesting, I think, for the races when have these horses like Latruska, she's a Kentucky bred, but finally she started the career at Mexico and after come here and all the biggest star to she is finally. No, she's a horse to take the attention for the others because it's a show finally when she run.
Yeah, definitely a show, and hopefully she puts on a show for Fausto Gutierrez and the connections later today. You know, when you moved back to the United States in 2019, Fausto, could you ever imagine you'd be competing at this level so quickly?
Really, no. Even first, I'm a fan for the Monomoy, for the Swiss Skydiver, because even at Mexico, I watched that races. At the 19th, December of 19, I go to the Eclipse ceremony with a good friend, and is when Monomoy win the 3 years old champion. And really, I never imagined we are run together and even to win her. I understand too, she's the real champion and she's a horse with a big... speak about Monomoy Girl is one of the best in the history for a lot of things to are around she. That day we defeat she, and I hope to we can run again together. More important to who win or who lost. I tell you, this is part of the races. Not that day we win by a nose, like we can lose by a nose. And this small distance, how big difference make, no?
Yeah, just a nose difference between Latruska and Monomoy Girl and the Apple Blossom at Oaklawn back on April 17th. And if Monomoy Girl does come back, and we know that she can bounce back quickly from any issues that she's had in the past, then that would be one heck of a showdown and one heck of a rematch. I know that it would be great for racing, and that is something that, Fausto, I know first and foremost, you want Letruska to win, but you love the sport so much that it would be great for the sport to see that rematch, wouldn't it?
Yes, correct. Finally, I repeat you, this sport for the races is to make difference, no? Because sometimes the average people tell to Arjun's horses run around and run more fast, win. But the persons we like and we understand this, we know all the passion and all the secrets and all the work and all the great histories to are around the racehorses.
Well, Fausto, listen, I'm so happy for you and for the team, and good luck with Letruska in the Fleur de Lis and moving on toward the Breeders' Cup as well. All the best, my friend. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for everything again.
All right, Fausto Gutierrez going down the road to the Breeders' Cup here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Don't forget HRN, your exclusive radio home for the Breeders' Cup once again here in 2021. The only place you'll hear the Breeders' Cup on radio, coast to coast and worldwide, is right here with us on HRN. I'll be back to wrap this one up right after these messages. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
And they're into the stretch with Spongeron, the wonder catch, coming to the eight pole. Spongeron drifting out with the lead. Blue Chipper on the inside is second. Omaha Beach has made its way up into third, but Spongeron has run away. Herod Ortiz and Spongeron, the real deal of the dirt mile. They won it by 3.5 lengths.
Gainesway Stallion spun to run. In the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, he defeated a loaded field that included multiple Grade 1 winners, Omaha Beach and Improbable. His brilliant speed figures were among the fastest of any 3-year-old at a mile or more, while earning multiple triple-digit buyers up to 110 and running a zero on the thoroughgrass 5 times. Spun to Run hails from the legendary Danzig sire line, a multiple Great Estates winner, millionaire, and Breeders' Cup champion. Great milers make great stallions. Spun to Run, standing at Gainesway.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
Hi, this is Kelsey Grammer. When military service members head into battle, none are expected to face the enemy alone, but many return home and become isolated as they struggle with the visible and invisible wounds of war. It can be difficult knowing how to overcome that challenge and rekindle bonds similar to those formed in the military. Wounded Warrior Project supports these injured veterans through their recoveries by connecting them with fellow warriors and their communities. No one should fight this battle alone. Join us at WoundedWarriorProject.org.
Thursday evenings, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, is the Briznet.com call-in show. It's your chance to call in and let the Horse Racing Radio Nation know what's on your mind. Call us at 888-966-HRRN and discuss the topics you choose in the world of thoroughbred racing. The Briznet.com call-in show, every Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, on Sirius 219 and XM 201, or streaming live online at horseracingradio.net.
Hi, this is Penelope Miller, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, the 130-page July issue of Blood Horse Magazine is out, and it's filled with features, including quite a run. COVID-19 proved just the latest challenge for Del Mar executive Ann Hall as the Southern California track prepares to welcome back fans. The path behind and ahead, due process, the Derby, and Dancer's Image playbook and how the 1968 Kentucky Derby winner's DQ set the stage for Medina Spirit and that dispute that is currently ongoing. And then enduring legacy, Rick Nichols reflects on the many accomplishments of Shadwell Farms' Sheikh Hamdan, who passed away earlier this year. You can download a copy of the issue now from Blood Horse Magazine, or you can do it through the app via the Apple Store, by, via the App Store or Google Play, or subscribe today and receive a free gift at bloodhorse.com/subscribers only. Well, it's really been a busy show. I hope you enjoyed these 3 hours. I know I did. It was a lot of fun, and got a chance to catch up with Jimmy Bell in the beginning of the show, the Godolphin president and racing manager, talking about Maxfield Essential Quality and all their contenders this year. Darren Rogers from Churchill was with me. My thanks to Dallas Baker from BetMakers, telling you about the fixed odds wagering coming to New Jersey. My thanks to Dallas Stewart, who was here in hour number three, and to Fausto Gutierrez going down the road to the Breeders' Cup. Of course, Kurt Becker and Sean Clancy for their contributions as well. Don't forget, if you missed any portion, head to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out the podcast of the entire show and to listen to exclusive interviews. All of our shows podcast for you at horseracingradio.net. Now for my producer, Lee Delapina, for Chauncey, handling all of our social media, doing a great job again this morning. I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next week here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Go Steelers.